Spirit, do you think this is the 9/11 and other deep state crimes teleconference for the 28th of September 2016? Jeff Reno facilitating and Cheryl Curtis and Craig McKee, our loyal secretary. And Craig, how are you doing with the role?
Well, I've probably got about half of the names down just from time I got on the call, so there are a bunch I don't know, but perhaps I can just read the ones I've got, and then we'll see who else we need to add. I have Lorenzo Fine. Is it Sue Serpa that's on?
Yeah.
I just got Susan. It is? Okay, great. P.F. Soto, Frank Tolopko, Robert, is it Cable? C-A-B-L-E?
Robert. Right.
Okay, great. Lynn, is that Lynn Bradbury?
Yes.
Okay. John O'Malley, Ed Jewett, Pablo Novi, Ben Collett, Paul Zaremka, Cheryl Curtis, Ken Freeland, and myself. That's who I have so far. So that's...
Barry Zwicker here.
Okay.
Jerry Turner. Okay.
And Shelly Collins.
Anna Yisley.
Yeah, Jack Graham. James Hubbard.
Okay, hold on. I'm writing as fast as I can here. James Hufford.
Jeff Baldwin. Mike Marino.
Okay, hold the fort for a second. Mike Marino. There's a couple I've missed as we've been...
Did you get Anna Yisley?
I did, yes.
Okay,
yes, hi, Anna. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has. I'm Diana Garcia, but I'm in a place where I don't have a good coverage, so I might get cut off. I called basically to vote for David Schlesinger to be able to stay on.
Right.
Barbara Honegger, hi. Barbara's been so long. This is Anna. Sorry about that. Oh, hi.
I'm here.
Sorry?
HUMMUS.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, gotcha. Sorry.
Ben Collett.
Yeah, Jeff Baldwin.
Is it Jack Baldwin or Jeff Baldwin?
Chuck.
Chuck, I'm sorry, Chuck. Yes, of course.
Is that Mr. Chuck Baldwin, Pastor Chuck Baldwin?
No, the guy was in Vancouver.
Okay.
Wayne Cassidy.
Mark Hightower.
Hello, I'm on.
Yep.
Jerry Turner.
I got you, Jerry.
Jerry Schlesinger.
Yeah, Dave.
Chuck Smith.
With the 9/11 crash test.
Chuck Smith. Sorry, what was the last one?
Steve Dayock with 9/11 crash test.
Okay.
Jack Graham.
I got Jack Graham. Got you.
Did I hear Chuck Smith? Chuck Smith just came on?
I got Chuck Smith.
Okay. Roger Borey.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Mark Hightower.
Yes, I got you, Mark.
Okay.
Kenyon Wild.
Sorry, the last one I didn't hear.
Kenyon Wild.
How do you spell that?
He's the guy that is... He's got the thing about
RUNYANWILDE.
Got it.
Craig, I got Xander Arena.
Sorry?
Xander Arena?
Xander. Yeah, I didn't get to you before.
Ben Collins.
Ben, I got you. I've got a whole whack of people here, so I don't know if I've missed anybody or not. I might have to just read it again.
Tom Tweeten.
Oh, okay. Right.
Dave Cole,
okay. Wow.
Did you get me, Cat McGuire?
Oh, no, I didn't. Cat. Okay. Um, Anybody else? I know there's probably some going to be somebody missing here.
Jonathan Mark.
Jonathan Martin?
Oh, Jonathan Mark, M-A-R-K.
Oh, Jonathan Mark, of course, sorry.
Okay.
the sound is inconsistent.
No, it was Barton Bruce saying, did you get Barton Bruce that crashed with Jonathan?
Oh.
That's what you heard.
I didn't have you, and now I do.
I typed up way back, but I think it was a collision with several other people at the same time.
Yeah.
And me too, Craig. Sheila,
okay. Okay. Wow, this is amazing. Okay. So I'm going to have to whip through this real quick because I have no idea if we've missed anybody or not. So let me try this. Sheila Casey, Jonathan Mark, Barton Bruce, Runyon Wild, Xander Arena, Tom Seaton, David Cole, Kat McGuire, Lorenzo Fine, Sue Serpa, T.F. Soto, Frank Kolobko, Robert Cable, Lynn Bradbury, John O'Malley, Ed Jewett, Pablo Novi, Ben Collett, Barbara Honegger, Hamulk, Mike Marino, James Hufford, Jack Graham, Anna Yisley, Jerry Turner, Barry Zwicker, Craig McKee, Ken Freeland, Cheryl Curtis, Paul Jaremka, Chuck Baldwin, Wayne Costi, Mark Hightower, Dave Schlesinger, Chuck Smith, Steve Dayak, and Roger Boris.
That's Dixon.
Sorry?
Diana Castillo.
Oh, okay.
Don't everybody speak at once now.
Okay.
How many people do you have all together?
Good Lord. Okay, give me a second here. One, two.
38.
I have 38.
Well, that's what I 38. Okay. Is everybody on the teleconference somebody who's invited to be on the teleconference? Is anybody here for the first time?
Yes, Mark Hightower here. I got an email from Jim Fetzer asking me if I could join this call. So I replied to him and said I would, but I really had no idea what exactly it was all about. So,
okay,
yeah, I'm
you,
here for the first time.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Anybody else here for the first
yeah,
time?
Yeah, Jeff Bowen also from Jim Fetzer. He sent me an email.
Okay.
Doug West is here. He applied and was listed, but this is his first call. Are you there, Doug?
Hello, are you?
Doug West?
I'm sorry, when did you apply, Doug?
2 months ago.
To whom?
Yeah. To you, Ken. He's listed on the list.
If he's listed on the list, that's fine. I'm not asking anybody who's not listed on the list here for the first time.
Are you there? Hello? Doug, are you there?
Okay, so I guess he's not here yet, so...
Okay, so anyway, anybody else here for the first time, not on the list? Okay. All right, so let's proceed then. The first part of our teleconference always is to approve the minutes of the previous teleconference as stipulated by Craig. Any objections to approving those minutes? Hearing none of the draft minutes are approved, and we'll move on to tonight's draft agenda. Okay, we've got a couple of problems with the agenda. The first being that, unfortunately, due to last-minute problems, David Rubin will not be able to join us tonight. Cheryl will give us the update on that in just a moment. Other than that, I've had some requests to change the order of the agenda a little bit. So in deference to our special guest, Chuck Smith, we'd like to ask him to go first. And then Cheryl has asked that her rule consideration be taken up before we take up any business. And then we'll proceed in the order of business that we have. If that's okay with everyone. Does anybody have any problem with those changes?
Ken Paul Zaremka here.
I'm sorry, Paul Zaremka, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to know whether when we get to the Schlesinger issue, whether you would recuse yourself because you've already taken action against him in another format.
I'm not, let's see. No, I haven't taken any action against him on the teleconference, so that's not, it's not the case, and I'm not part of the, I'm not one of the people who's making the motion, so no, I don't see the point of that.
You banned me from the listserv already.
The listserv is not the teleconference, okay?
We're not going to address the listserv matter here today?
No, that's not at the moment. Okay, we're at the moment.
Why
we're
not?
Dealing with the, we're only dealing with the post. Right now we're dealing
you said
with
we,
the,
I could be
agenda.
Restored. Why can't it be part
sorry.
Of this?
It's not part of the agenda.
We're not,
it should be.
The agenda right
it
now.
Should
so
be. I appeal the decision not to have that on the agenda. The reason I was banned from the listserv is because
excuse
I noted...
David, you're out of order. Now, here's what I've asked, and I'm waiting for a response to this. Does anybody have any objection to the changes that I've requested for the draft agenda? Yes or no?
I have objections.
I have an objection to changing the order. Very well.
I have an objection to leaving the discussion of my being banned from
the
listserv off the agenda.
David, you're not listening. No, as usual, you're not listening.
I appeal.
That's not the question.
I appeal.
No, you may not appeal that because that's not the question. The question is whether anybody has any problems with the order change that I proposed. Are there any problems with that? Hearing none, then we will accept those changes. Now, I have the second request for the agenda, and that is that we add a brief discussion at the end, a review of the New York events that we discussed, our responses to the Justice Institute events in New York. Does anybody have any problem with adding that at the end, now that we have all this extra time to work with? Hearing none, then that will be the last item on the agenda.
Well, I have a request, Ms. Barr.
Oh, my God.
To
you're putting that on the agenda,
sure.
David. Is that correct? You're putting that on the agenda?
You said when you banned me from the listserv that it could be appealed.
Oh, my God. You're not listening, David. I'm asking simply at this point, does anybody have any problem with putting this discussion at the end of the listserv, at the end of our agenda? Yes or no? This is the only question we're dealing with.
Mrs. Barb, I have a request to talk about the gas debate.
You may not introduce new questions until we resolve this question, Barbara. The question is whether or not anybody has any problem with having this discussion at the end, yes or no. Does anybody have a problem with that? Hearing none, then that discussion will be at the end. Now, oh my God. What's the objection? At the end of the agenda. Who wants to make that objection? All right. So I don't hear any objections. So we will have that discussion.
I think Ken, this is Cheryl. I think someone is trying to speak, but they're really hard to hear. So whoever that is, if you could, I don't know, try and speak more into the phone or something.
Okay. I'm trying. Okay. Wait a second. Hold on.
You're not audible. Whoever you are, you're not coming through well enough to be heard.
How's that? How about now?
Yeah, now we can hear you. Now we can hear you.
I don't know why my phone doesn't
work. State your objections to putting this discussion at the end of the agenda, please.
Because I have a dinner date that will prevent me from being part of this discussion if it's put to the end. And it has to do with voting with on the issue of Dave Schlesinger.
No,
yes.
No, you're not listening. I'm asking to put a focused discussion about the Justices Focus Conference in New York at the end of
agenda. No problem. No objection. I'm sorry.
Who's speaking now?
Roger.
Roger. Okay.
And Barbara then.
Barbara.
Yeah, I'd like to propose at least a short discussion of the historic gas to vote today at the end.
Okay. Any objections putting that behind the discussion of New York? During London, we'll also have a short discussion on the gas to vote. Okay. So, are there any other amendments or requests to the draft agenda before we proceed?
Dave Schlesinger.
Dave, go ahead.
Yes. When you banned me a week or so ago from the listserv, you noted that I could be restored, and that should be done at the same time that the other discussion about my participation is held. I would also like to be able to recount what I emailed which caused you to ban me.
Well, David, what I said was that if the conference was to reinstate to maintain you on the teleconference, you would automatically be using your privileges on the list.
Good enough.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Now, with no further ado, let's take a moment to hear from Augsburg. So we're ready to proceed. Cheryl will give the update, the good news and the bad news regarding David Griffin. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah, I'm really sorry, everyone. I know that's why we have such large numbers tonight, probably is because David was going to be on the call. But he emailed me at about 6 o'clock Eastern time and said that he lost his phone and his wife is away for the day. And he didn't have any kind of landline. So he has no way to talk to us. And he requested to be on some kind of an echo there.
Yeah, we're getting an echo.
Everybody, please mute your phone. Please mute your phone if you're not Cheryl or Chuck Smith.
Is that by star 6?
It's star 6 to mute your phone, and it's star 6 to come back whenever you feel like it, okay? Star 6 to everybody, unless you're Cheryl.
Now, Cheryl, would you start again?
Yeah. Yes, I will. Wait a minute. Okay, it sounds good now. Okay, so David emailed me this afternoon around 6 o'clock Eastern time and said that he lost his cell phone today and his wife was away and he had no way to come on the call because he didn't have a landline or anything. He requested to be on next month's call, so I told him that's fine, we'll put him on next month. And he said his book won't be out by then anyway, so we won't be missing anything in terms of, you know, the book coming out before we have our call, if that's important to anybody. So he will be on the next call, and sorry about tonight. There's nothing we could do about it. But anyway, we're glad you're all here. So.
Okay, thank you, Cheryl. Well, David...
Can I ask the name of the book?
Yes, it's called How Bush and Cheney Ruined the World and America, or America and the World.
Okay.
America and the World.
America and the World, okay. And according to David, the first two-thirds of it are about Bush and Cheney and how they ruined the world, and then the last third is about 9/11.
Okay, thanks, Cheryl. So, bad news or good news, we'll look forward to hearing David on the call next month, God willing. But we're not without another special guest, and I'd like to introduce him forthwith. I'm following the description from the one that was given for him, the introduction given for him on Colorado Public Television when his film, Demolition of Truth, was presented to a wide public audience. Mel Hewing Smith is a sound editor whose film credits include Pulp Fiction, Rose of the Dog, Sin City, The Long Lost, The Long Kiss Goodnight, and The Witches of Eastwick, among many others. A recipient of 5 Golden Reel nominations, Chuck was executive producer with Richard Gage and co-editor of 9/11 Explosive Evidence Experts to Capitol, one of the most widely viewed 9/11 documentaries ever made. After revisiting the complete interview footage of the psychologist who appeared at the end of that film, Chuck was moved to make The Demolition of Truth, psychologists examine 9/11 in order to share their powerful and compelling message. And I just want to say on a personal note that I've just been incredibly impressed by the professionalism and the message of this film. And I hope everyone here has taken the opportunity to see it. If you haven't, it can still be viewed live on Colorado Public Television's webpage. And I urge everyone to watch the entire film, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So without further ado, Chuck, we warmly welcome you to the 9/11 Truth Conference. Apologies for the long delay in getting started here tonight, and we look forward to hearing your comments. Go ahead.
Yeah. This is Wayne. Can you, if people go on mute, there's an awful lot of like people shuffling or crinkling. Thank you.
Star six. If you're not Chuck Smith, star six, please. Star six,
can you hear me?
Just star six anytime you come back. Chuck, we can hear you fine. The floor is yours.
You can hear me fine.
To the 9/11 Truth and Other Deep Space Science Teleconference. I'm going to a quiet spot here.
Okay, I guess we're in the clear. Mm-hmm. All right. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on. Don't know what to say other than for me it was on the morning of 9/11. I sat there like our jaws dropping, and as a sound effects guy, I have a just kind of an unusual, I guess, take on it. Most people don't quite understand this, but as a sound effects editor, my job is to take a picture and add sound to it. And so when they give us a movie to add sound to, we don't really have any sound to work from. We generally operate out of our imagination. So when I'm looking at this building coming down, besides being astonished, I'm going, what sounds would I hear, you know? What could cause that thing to go across like that, you know? And so this is going on in my mind. So I had it figured out that it was some kind of explosion then. And then, of course, with all the wars and everything, it got put on the back burner. But then when the reports came out, they said fire brought it down. What they said about the towers, all of it, just blew them off. So I started looking on the internet, and I ran across Richard Gage's video, Blueprint for Truth, and I watched that and joined AE that day and immediately started coming on the phone calls. And you know, in the course of it, I realized that, you know, as a guy who's done editing, that I had a skill set that they might use. So I got involved with creating this 9/11 explosive evidence, Experts Speak Out, and shepherding that into creation. And so time has gone, and I suppose most of you folks have seen it, and I had the outfit. All these videos, and I keep looking at them, and I'm going, you know, there's more here. And the psychology section in 9/11 Evidence, Experts Speak Out, proved to be extremely popular. And since I was involved with that scene there to begin with, it was kind of my baby to have psychologists in the film. I kept going back to it and going, you know, what can I do? And finally, I watched it over enough that I realized there's enough material here that I could actually try and make something out of this that nobody else is saying. And so I started doing that, and it was coming together quite quickly and, in a rough way, and I sent it off to the psychologists who were in it to see if they were okay with it, you know, if it was something that they would take it back. And they got very excited. And so it just kind of went on from there. I worked on it for all told close to 2 years. And I just did it by myself and self-financed and just worked it out. And, I call it a found art project. It's a situation where, you know, instead of drafting and then proceeding to, put visuals in that exemplify that script, I had visuals and words, and I had to find a way to put them together in a way that made sense as a cohesive whole. And luckily, the psychologists were so provocative, kind of off, you know, off topic as far as architects and engineers are concerned. They wanted to talk about, you know, how we could be fooled and what could be fooling us, and that was beyond the interests of the architects and engineers who were, really wanted to hear more stuff that pointed towards their scientific discovery. So we had all this material anyway, to get back to that. And I looked at it and I determined there was enough there. And it came together and it's been a kind of a black sheet. Nobody's wanted to touch it when they eat, particularly because it's off topic. But yeah, we can go ahead and make it and use the footage. So it's, you know, it's a push me pull you as far as that goes from my point of view. But it was remarkably because of I suppose Frank Scherer being up there in Colorado, one of the psychologists, being in touch with Colorado Public Television, which had screened 9/11 explosive evidence 3 or 4 years ago. And she got in touch with them, and Sherry Greenson wanted to see it, and she saw it, and she loved it, and they showed it, and it's been a big success for them. It brought in twice as much money for Colorado Public Television as 9/11 explosive evidence did. So they're pretty happy about it. They're showing a two-hour program. You can watch it either on YouTube or on PBS.org. Or on Colorado Public Television. That's like three places that the two-hour program is being shown.
I guess each person will get a couple minutes.
It's not the complete cut.
Excuse me for a second. I'm sorry, Chuck, just a second. Whoever is talking, please mute your microphone. Star 6, please. Thank you. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, it's not the complete cut that they have. I had to cut it down. In order for them to show the complete cut, they would have had to have a three-hour program. So, and they, you know, it was there. They brought it up. They said, we might change to 3 hours. And I'm going, hey, go for it. But in the end, I had to cut 40 minutes out of it. So, but then 3 weeks ago or whatever or so, it was the opening film at the 9/11 Truth Film Festival in Oakland with Ken Jenkins, and went over really well there. So where does it stand now? I've made DVDs. I don't have a place to sell them yet. I'm hoping I can get it into the AE store. There is some effort to get me into the AE store so that I could let them sell it, which I'm in favor of. I mean, I donated all my energy to 9/11 explosive evidence, years worth, and so I'm obviously in favor of them doing well. And so I would do that with them on the DVDs. If they don't want it, then I'm looking for a fulfillment situation, and I suppose I'll end up, you know, pushing it into the the Amazons and iTunes and that kind of stuff, wherever I can get it. As time moves on, clearly we're not in any huge hurry. I'd have been panicked. I would have felt some urgency maybe 10 years ago or 5 years ago even. But now it looks like it's going to be, we're stuck with it for a while. So just getting it out. I'm a one-man band, just trying to help. And I had this material, and so there it is. I made something, and as luck would have it, people like it. And compliments are really generous and wonderful, actually. And I have to find a way to get it out. And one last statement is that it is available for video on demand. I do have it on Vimeo for rent and for sale as a download. The uncut version in high definition. And, so it's much, much better film experience than what the PBS experience is, as interesting as that is. So I'll just give you the address if anybody wants to write it down. It's Vimeo, /ondemand, ondemand, /TOT, for Demolition of Truth. So it's pretty simple. And if you can spread the word around and help me get the word out somehow, that's my goal now, guys and gals, I need to publicize it. I feel comfortable with it now. Enough people have seen it and have responded really positively that I feel comfortable in, trying to push it out there, even though it isn't, like a theatrical quality film, probably. it's the message is better than a theatrical quality. So that's pretty much the deal there. I guess that's it. Any questions? And I don't claim to have any answers, but I'll make take
sure. Before we take a stack, and anybody who wants to ask a question, please press star 6 and unmute yourself. How much does the film sell for Vimeo?
It sells for $10 and rents for $5. And if you download the $10 one, you can burn it onto DVD, give it to others, show it at your local library.
Sounds pretty reasonable to me.
Thank you for your effort. Dave Schlesinger here.
Okay, Dave, would you like to be on the stack to ask your question?
Please.
Okay, who else would like to be on the stack to ask your question?
Jonathan Mark.
Jonathan, who else?
Tom Tweeden.
I didn't catch that. It was Tom who?
Tweeden.
Tom Tweeden, okay. Who else?
Also Xander.
Xander, who else?
Hello, Greg Longo here.
Greg, we would like to ask a question, is that right?
No, I just checking in right now.
Oh, okay. Sorry. We'd like to ask a question of okay, well, Dave Schlesinger, you're first.
Yes, I'm interested in being able to put it on cable access. Is there a 58-minute version or something like that?
Well, there isn't, Dave, and maybe in about 6 months I'll find a way to make, it's like pulling teeth for me, quite honestly, to pull anything out of this documentary. I had gone over this for, been going over this for a year with the psychologist, and we had gotten it pretty tight.
How about an 88-minute version?
Well, if you listen to what I'm saying, that it was really tough for me, and I kind of ended up just making arbitrary hacks at it because it's too complicated to cut really elegantly. As a filmmaker, that's of course, I would try to make it as best as I could. So right now, the PBS version, which is, three-quarters of it, or four-fifths of it or something, is all over the place. It's got almost 12,000 views on YouTube, and PBS.org is going to be showing it for a year. It's really available. And as far as I remember from the Experts Speak Out, the community television stuff is never organized. And it never really, there's some effort, but it's not bringing in the reward balance to the energy expended. So I'm not in any urgent mood to feel like that's a market that we're just missing out on. Down the road, yes, I will try to make a version that falls within less than 60 minutes that is coherent. And that's the problem. Remember the problem, David, for me is that I didn't write this in advance. It wrote itself, based on the words that had already been said by people who didn't know that it would ever come together like this. So it's an unusual situation for me, and it's more difficult than it seems. I could. If the kids don't mind watching Mickey Mouse with only one ear, I guess that's okay. But as Walt Disney would cringe, I'm sure. So that's just maybe a lousy example, but it's just me. It works as a whole. It doesn't work with doing any of the pieces missing.
I can follow up later. That's good enough.
I was amazed that people liked it on PBS as much as they did, because I didn't think that it was complete. But apparently, for me, a lot of information it makes it complete. For other people, less information, they're still satisfied. So it's hard for me to figure that one out, David.
I'll call you.
All right, thank you. Jonathan, you're next.
My community TV station will play it no matter what size it is. I just wanted to make sure I could play it there at Greenfield Community Television and other local stations in New England. I think people like it so much because it answers the question why so many avoid the topic and why the, you know, the peace activists are, now that they're aware of 9/11, aware of Building 7, they still don't want to talk about it. And this film, it kind of gives an explanation for why. And there was a recent article called Why I Don't Speak About 9/11 Anymore. And it was excellent. It gave the connections with the anthrax, with all the other, you know, control of the media and the basically the mind control element. And, you know, your film is a great antidote, and I just want to thank you. So I'll be showing it on the community TV stations and presenting as much as possible because it answers that question. And so thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you, John. That was the missing, that was the gap,
Yeah.
We all felt it.
Great. Thank you. Tom Sweden?
Hi, everybody, and Chuck. I too want to thank you. First, I want to get the Vineo. Would you give me that site again where I can go to order this? Vineo.
Dim, as in Mac. Dimeo/ondemand D as in dog, O as in Oscar, T as in drone.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. I have what's called the 9/11 DVD project, and I watch some duplicators and pass out, make DVDs and give them away. I used to sell them for what it cost me, but now I just give them away. And would it be okay for me to download or get a copy of your work and give it away, make my own duplicated copies and pass them out?
Yeah, I'm in favor of anybody giving them away, you know. I mean, because I gave up 2 years of my life, so I'd like the people to give them away, to give up the very minor cost of making, you know, they can make them up.
Yeah, that's my intention, and that's what I do. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. And Xander. Xander, El Serena.
Yeah, sorry, I'm muting. Hey, so I donated the $50 requested at Colorado Public Television, and I was wondering if, you know, the copy that I'll be receiving, will it be the full version, or is it the version that was played on CBS, you know?
To get the full version.
Oh, very good. All right, I'm looking forward to that. Excellent work. It was really just an incredible film, and I just wanted to put a bug in your ear also to maybe encourage you to consider some different 9/11 truth topics. I'm really interested. I know there's the movie Hypothesis that covers Stephen Jones, but some further look into the nanothermite and that group. Just maybe some interviews with some of these people. You know, we all have short lives to live, and
let me ask you a question. Are you asking me to get some more information out about the nanothermite from the people that found it? Is that what you were asking?
That is what I'm asking. Yeah, I'm saying that is a really valid topic, and I'm so impressed with your work. I think you could do a really good job with it, is what I'm saying.
Well, the truth of the matter is I've already done it, and I've got it. And in fact, I was just looking at it last night and going, okay, it's time to throw this scientific phone out there. I've got it, and I've already put it together for the most part. And so it's basically...
All right.
It's basically just the people who found the nanothermite talking about their experience. So,
beautiful. All right, man, we're on the same page. This is very cool.
Yeah, it'll be coming out. I think I'm going to call it something like the Experts Speak Out Chronicles or something, and then call it nanothermite.
Okay. Cool.
Just so you'll know. Thanks. When it comes out, you'll see something like that.
Looking forward to it.
It'll be free, by the way.
Sorry, talk about quick results. I guess that brings us to the end of the set, but Chuck, I just wanted to say that you've created an extremely watchable film. It's probably the most watchable of all the 9/11 truth films I've ever seen, and kudos to you, and I hope that you'll continue to make the invaluable contribution that you're making to the 9/11 truth movement.
Oh, I can't stop. You know, I can't stand the lies. You know, I was in the Air Force, so I had to sign, agree to that, protect our country from all, both foreign and domestic. And you know, I'm just naive enough that I took it serious. So, you know, call me a fool, but it gives me something to do in my old age.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chuck. All right.
Sure.
All right, so we're ready for our next agenda item, which according to the reordered agenda will be Cheryl's proposal that we exclude from voting anyone who's not present from the beginning of a motion discussion. Okay, whoever's got talking going on in the background, please mute your phone. Star six. Cheryl, okay, first of all, since this is an individual proposal, it needs a second. Anyone care to second Cheryl's decision? Cheryl's proposal?
Could Cheryl clarify it first? I'm not sure what it means. Yeah, it means that if we're in the middle of a discussion and we're having a vote on that discussion at the end of the discussion and people come in, you know, during the discussion and miss the first half of it or something and then that they should not be allowed to vote. Only people who've heard the entire discussion should be able to vote on it.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Moven seconded, and the motion reads as follows. And any decision made by the teleconference, only those present from the commencement of its discussion are eligible to vote. Would anyone help the Cheryl, you want to go ahead and motivate it, and then we'll take others to talk about it? Go ahead.
It happened last time we had a vote, and it didn't change the vote. The vote was already, you know, in one direction, and the people that came on just voted in that same, you know, in the majority vote. So it didn't matter then, but it made me think it could have an impact sometimes, and I don't feel like people who came in late really understood what we were voting on. So for future votes, I think it's important that people be on for the whole call. And I don't know if anyone wants to comment on that or any other thoughts on it.
This is Barb.
I have a comment. Barbara.
Barbara. Anybody else want to be on the stack to speak to this question? Okay, Barbara, go ahead.
Right. Well, it seems to me that the spirit of what you're saying, Cheryl, I like the idea, but the spirit, shouldn't it be that anyone who's on the call by the time of the beginning of the discussion can vote, that you wouldn't have to necessarily be on from minute one?
That's how it reads.
I think that's what it says, yeah, from the beginning of the discussion of the topic to be voted on, not for the entire call.
So they could, if the topic started to be discussed at 20 minutes in and they came in at 19 minutes in, that they would be able to vote.
Right, exactly. They just have to hear the entire discussion of what's being voted on.
Okay, and one other point of clarification.
Question.
I have one other clarification question. Do you know what we're voting on? And I just want to be sure that your proposal does not refer to something that is being discussed over more than one call. It's just about within a single call.
Right, correct.
Okay, thank you.
This is Susan. I have a question about the proposal.
Go ahead, Susan.
I'm just not sure. It's a good idea, I guess, but I'm not sure how it can be implemented.
Question, Ed, do you have the technology in staff?
Let me respond to that. The answer is that normally when I have computer access, I have a visual that shows people coming on the call and the time to come on the call. And generally, when people come on, everybody hears a ding anyway, so we know that people are coming on the call. So it becomes pretty clear, and you know, we usually ask people who announce themselves as they come on the call. So it's generally pretty recognized that people have come in later.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, does anybody else need to speak to the issue before we vote on it?
I've got one other clarification question, Barb.
Barbara?
Yeah, I just, in order to implement it, as Sue Serpich in order to implement it, would it not be the case that you'd have to have a roll call vote? Because if it were just a voice vote, you couldn't really tell.
Well, actually, we've got a couple of different
options there. One is that, you know, up to my end, I could meet anybody who came on in the middle of a discussion from my end, or, at, you know, so that would be one possibility.
Oh, okay.
That's only if I happen to have computer access, which I generally do.
Okay, as long as there's a way for you to do it, thank you.
Okay. Any other comments before we vote on this? All right, then. All in favor of the special rule as proposed by Cheryl, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay.
Aye.
Aye. We've got a lot of ayes and no nays. So I guess we will consider this unanimous for support and we'll move on.
But one abstain.
One abstain. One abstain. All right, well, I guess who wants to say the other thing?
Jonathan Mark.
Jonathan Mark, okay. You want to note that? You want that noted in the record?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we now move on to our next item, which is, Craig, are you on the call?
Yeah, I'm here, but unfortunately the 10-minute timeout that I was telling you about I was going to need at some point, I thought would come later, but it's going to come, like, right now, so I'm going to be, for, like, the next 10 minutes, I'm not going to be able to participate.
All right. Well, then we'll have to postpone this item until you can return to the call. So let's...
it'll be less than 15 minutes.
Next item, and we'll pick that up as soon as Fred returns to the call, and we have an opening in the agenda. So that would bring us to... that would bring us to Wayne Coffey's presentation on the Mini Geek series. Wayne?
Yeah, well, Ken, thank you very much. I want to thank again the 911 State Crime Teleconference for setting aside this time. What I want to do is review the atomic elements that were found at the World Trade Center. It's not exactly the title that's in the agenda isn't quite right. Challenging the Mini Geek series is... probably a little not quite right because there's so many different issues. I'm only looking at one very specific issue, trying to make sure everyone is aware of the atomic elements discussion. The presentation that I'm going to be going can be found at a website, hopeoutloud.org/pentagon, and it's at the very bottom of the page. So if you didn't get it through the agenda, that's where you can get it. So it's a PowerPoint. It's a lot of slides, so I've got to go through it pretty quickly. So jumping down to slide two, I want to cover a number of topics tonight. This is the table of contents. I want to touch on the background for the need for this review. I want to talk about the U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, documenting element concentrations around the United States. I want to touch on a comparison of distributions of element concentrations between the World Trade Center and the USGS. I want to do a short section on iron, and I'll conclude with an introduction to the tritium issue. Slide four. As background, at various venues, including the last monthly teleconference, the presence of various elements in the samples from the World Trade Center debris were viewed as ominous, and set to support a nuclear devices making the destruction of the Twin Towers a nuclear event. This discussion is really dominated by alarming statements that, quote, these elements shouldn't be there. You know, Jim Fetzer mentioned these alarming statistics during his review of his upcoming book. Barbara Harniger, for example, has included this in the 9/11 Memorial Walking Tour, and, you know, for that reason, it's difficult to promote it. So... it's something that I think is very important. So let's move on to slide five. For a little bit of background, in the following slides, I'm going to be showing that the element concentrations at the World Trade Center are within the range of expected concentrations based on national and eastern United States surveys done by the USGS. These go back many decades, the data that is compiled by them. There are some elements whose concentrations are higher than normal. They can be explained by the materials within the Twin Towers. For example, exceedances of strontium can be explained by the presence of that material in as a significant component in fluorescent light, sand, and glass. Zinc is what the tons of galvanized steel were coated with, and we saw that those were blown off as the buildings are being destroyed. The ratios and concentrations of most of these elements at the World Trade Center can be expected to be found anywhere in the United States. There's nothing unusual about the samples that were found at the World Trade Center, and that's what I want to do and go through. The next couple of slides, slides 6, 7, and 8, are just taken from one of the many samples out there of people using alarming statistics, and it basically shows they haven't done their homework. So I'm going to give you my homework here. So going on to slide 9, slide 9 introduces the USGS chemistry table. You can see a link at the bottom. It summarizes the concentrations for trace elements that were investigated in the World Trade Center dust. You click on that link and get the data and see what's there and see some other discussion on it. Slide 10, just highlighting the fact that you're going to see things in terms of parts per million. One part per million or 10,000 parts per million is 1% of the material. Slide 11 reminds us that the USGS element analysis did not attempt to identify isotopes for identified elements, just the presence of that element itself. And isotopes are the unstable form of the element, and that is frequently caused by the nuclear events, and they're usually a small component of that. Going on to slide 12. Slide 12 is a map showing where in the lower Manhattan that the samples were taken. So a lot of information at that chemistry table link that I gave you. Slide 13 highlights the range of concentrations of various elements that were found in lower Manhattan. It's going to take a moment to go through this. The blue bars that you see going from left to right, kind of going down, sloping downward, the blue bars show the range of the concentrations that were found at the World Trade Center. The yellow is the mean of that distribution. And I've highlighted 10 of them, 10 of the elements that I'll be comparing. And those are highlighted in the big red boxes. The red line in the middle of most of the distributions, and sometimes they're off to one side, is the mean of the distribution for the eastern United States. However, no indication is shown on this slide about the expected range of elements that would be expected in the eastern United States samples. And you have to remember that a lot of the materials in this World Trade Center was concrete. That means that they used stone and aggregates from various places around the New York City or the New York area. The red line. So without the information about the variability in the expected samples, there's no way to actually say that the World Trade Center amounts are unexpected. So we're going to have to go through another way of looking at that. Jumping to slide 16. Slide 16 is the USGS study. It's the cover page for the Shacklett and Borgen analysis or statistical summary. Slide 17 shows a map of the United States where samples were taken, and this is for uranium. It shows you where all the samples were taken, and if you look at the little graph on the bottom left-hand side, what you see is the distribution of uranium in all those different samples, and you can see there's quite a range depending on where it was taken, whether it was Montana or Florida or Texas. But you can see that there's central tendencies, and so we're going to be comparing distributions like this. Jumping to slide 19. Slide 19 provides some background on the statistics. I don't have time for a whole primer on statistics, but I'll note here that we can't perform a student's t-test using the available data. In other words, we can't make a statement that says with an 85% confidence, we can say that the World Trade Center samples come from a national distribution of these respective elements. We can't do that with the available data because of the way that it's, just because I don't have all the raw data. And that's what it would take. Slide 20 says that given the distribution limitations, the best way to assess the distributions is graphically by showing the distributions from the Shacklett and Borman distributions versus the World Trade Center samples using the same scale, so you can visually see what they look like. Slide 21 shows a distribution, for example, for barium. The image on the right is from Shacklett and Borman for barium. And the blue image on the left is the distribution of the World Trade Center samples. The red square on the blue graph shows the column where the USPS mean would fall, and the green triangle shows the column where the World Trade Center mean would fall. So, and here you can see that they were in neighboring bins, I guess is the best way to call it. So this is the way that I'm going to be looking at all these other distributions, and I'm going to go through them quickly just so that we can just touch on them. Slide 22 shows chromium. While the World Trade Center mean is higher than the national mean, you can see that the blue distribution is not out of range from the national distribution. So looking, comparing the means is one thing, but looking at the entire distribution tells you a different story. Slide 23 shows the same for lanthanum. Nothing seems out of bounds here. You can make your own judgments, but it looks like they come from a similar distribution. Slide 24 shows lithium. Again, it shows more of the same. The two distributions seem to overlap pretty closely. Slide 25 is strontium. You can see for strontium that while it's higher than the national average from looking at the mean, it's not very far out of bounds compared to the entire distribution. There is that one sample on the right-hand side of the blue distribution at the 3,000 level. Slide 26 is thorium. Oh, one of those frightening elements. But if you take a look at the amount of thorium that was in the World Trade Center dust samples compared to the national samples, you'll see that they're about the same. Nothing out of range. Uranium. How many of you knew that the average uranium in the United States was 1.8 parts per million? You know, everywhere. Every bit of dust, right? That's a good estimate. So this is what uranium would be. Slide 28 has yttrium, and there are sources for these, and the World Trade Center samples are slightly higher, but again, it's not out of range for the national samples. 29 shows zinc, and you can see that zinc is much higher, but as I mentioned earlier, that is a part what was used for galvanizing steel, and we saw a lot of galvanized steel severely abraded, leaving expecting to leave particles all over the place. Slide 30 touches on the cesium. Cesium was not available in the U.S. soil samples from Shackle and Borman. Let me go down to the next page. Slide 31 shows, going back to the other distributions, you can see where cesium is. The amount of cesium in the World Trade Center samples is much lower than what would be expected in the U.S., eastern U.S. Soil samples. So it's a lot lower than the red line. That's all I can say about it. So now I want to go touch briefly on iron. And I want to touch on iron. As we see here on slide 33, this shows the concentrations of iron. There's nothing unusual here. In fact, the distributions for the World Trade Center tends to be on the lower side. The reason we're addressing this is that we keep hearing things about steel dustification or the steel disappeared or whatever in various people in various contexts. If steel were to have been destroyed by turning into dust, the presence of iron in the dust would be much higher than a normal sample. And so let's go to slide 34. Which is the distribution, and you can see just how well the iron lines up. So let's move on to tritium, slide 36. Slide 36 talks about the reason that tritium was investigated in the study done by Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. They wanted to investigate the release of tritium from manufactured devices. Tritium is manufactured. I didn't know this before I started looking into it. Tritium is actually a manufactured product, and you can buy it. for various purposes. It's manufactured for things such as watch dials, exit lights, night vision scopes, and there were dozens of night vision scopes in the World Trade Center complex. Slide 37. In the basement of World Trade Center 6, one sample had an elevated level, very high level, compared to everything else. It was 3,500 picocuries per liter. There's another sample that was lower than that, but still elevated. But if you exclude, and they were both in the World Trade Center Building 6 basement and sewer. The highest value was 210 picocuries per liter from all the surrounding areas, Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan. So, and there are many, many samples at those lower levels, and those are just about the same as background. A violent dispersion of a nuclear event that would have created this tritium would have contaminated large areas with the high levels of tritium, not just two samples in the basement of World Trade Center 6 after the rainstorm. Slide 38 and 39 both show that the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, considers tritium to be a problem. It's an indicator of a leak, and in the groundwater for these two particular facilities, you can see that the concentrations were up to 450,000 picocuries per liter to 600,000 picocuries per liter at Indian Point Station, which is about 20 miles upstream of the World Trade Center on the Hudson River. Slides 41 and 42 talk about the likely sources of yttrium and strontium in the World Trade Center dust. Strontium is used in the manufacture, as I said, of fluorescent lights and glass, and there's a lot of those that were destroyed. And yttrium is used in making phosphors that were in the computer terminals, the color terminals that were so widely used in so many of the offices at the World Trade Center. And that's tried to run through this as fast as I could, mindful of the time, my time limitations, and I'm here to take questions now. Over.
Thank you very much, Wayne, for your presentation. We do have a little bit more time to work with than we had when we first assigned you your limited time. So if you wanted to take about a couple of minutes, you could.
Well, you know, I've kind of gone through all of everything I wanted to. You know, I thought I could do it in 15 minutes anyways, but, you know, the whole point of doing this was there's all this discussion from people who make, like, yttrium is never supposed to be found anywhere. But if you take a look at soil samples in the East or nationally, there's this stuff's everywhere. We don't know from any of the analysis what the isotopes were, but these elements are not unusual. You'd find, you know, the element pairings, all that other stuff that you keep hearing about. There's nothing unusual about the ratios of this stuff in normal samples. You can do this is three times higher than that stuff, and you can do that with samples from anywhere. That's all. If there are no more questions,
let's see if there's any questions. Anybody besides you'd like to be on the set?
Xander.
Barbara.
Xander. Who else?
Paul.
Who else?
Lorenzo would like to be on the stack.
Paul Lorenzo.
Tom Sweden.
Who else?
Chuck Bowen.
Who else?
Roger.
Roger. Who else? Oh, I'll put myself last. Go ahead, Xander.
Okay. So, excellent presentation, and you're right on the mark with all of it. I work with radioactive materials on a daily basis and have had the opportunity to get some formal training on behalf of NRC and Oak Ridge National Labs and some other stuff in a prior incarnation. The other thing, that if you wanted to take this even further, any decay chain reactions from a fission explosion would have additional radionuclides present that or didn't even make the list, iodine-131, so a whole slew of other ones. You also have no gamma emitters in any of that stuff, and they didn't really look, at least, what is being presented is just showing elemental composition, and as you've mentioned, you know, there's no specific variances in the isotopes listed, but all of this is normal. Exactly what you're saying, the abundance is normal. And sources for these other things, like the yttrium, for example, you pointed out correctly, computers is the perfect one. There might have been lasers in the building. Ophthalmologists use yttrium lasers. I mean, there's a lot going on that could create these subtle little peaks of these different elements. And, you know, the towers clearly were blown up, and so you're going to have a pretty uniform dispersion of what was in there. So if you had things like marble facades and stuff like that, there's high concentrations of uranium in granite and marble. So it's just, all of this is normal. And then the sorts of products that you would see from a nuclear reaction are not present. I think this is just another really good refutation of the mini nuke. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you, Xander. Paul, you're next.
Yeah, can you just give me a broader picture of what I'm supposed to learn? I'm not trying to be negative. What's the message? What do I learn from all this?
Well, as I think Xander pointed out, that there's nothing unusual in the dust that is present in and around World Trade Center as documented by the USGS. Some people want to make like it's a really outrageous amount of elements, but the elements are absolutely normal.
No, but I mean, I'm talking about the issues that everybody's talking about, nanothermite, nukes, and that kind of stuff. I mean, put us into that context.
Well, basically first of all, this is just a piece of data that has been misused by many people. So we're just trying to provide an educational opportunity for you to understand when people say that yttrium shouldn't ever be there, barium should never be there, that yes, indeed, they should be. And that's the whole point of the message. There's nothing else, no more than that. I'm not advocating for any particular types of demolition, just that there's nothing unusual in this, even though some people make it out to be ominous. Over.
Could I follow up just to ask, does that imply that the evidence about nanothermite is not genuine? Or I mean, I suppose you're going to say no, but could you elaborate?
No. The other things that the USGS surveys did is they identified from a more macroscopic, not element analysis, they found tiny iron spheres, and the iron spheres had the same chemical composition of the little red gray chips. So one of the was a gray layer of the red gray chips, and that's all documented in the Stephen Jones, Neil Harris, Jeffrey Farmer paper on nanothermite. So that's what's available in the USGS. There's actually a lot of stuff. Other stuff that we could talk about, but I think I'd like to move on to the next question. I think I've covered it.
Okay, fair enough. Mr. Lorenzo, next.
I believe I would be next, Barbara.
Barbara, I never caught you. I'll put you last on the list for myself, okay? Paul Lorenzo. Lorenzo?
Oh, Lorenzo.
Yes.
Right. I a question regarding what a geological, well deep underneath. How is the lowest?
I'm sorry,
level.
Sorry, Paul. Sorry. Somebody's got a lot of background noise going on. Star 6, if you're not on the stack to speak, please. Star 6, so everybody can hear what's being said. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lorenzo.
There are a number of images of a very well-defined pit beneath the lowest construction, or the lowest what appears to be the lowest excavated levels of the World Trade Center area. And it's a phenomenon that I'm still puzzled by. It's a very, very clean, there's one hemispherical section. It appears as though a very high energy event happened in the underground, well beneath the World Trade Center to create this. And I'm just curious about what kind of, if other people first have noticed this or have anything to say about it, and what could have caused this. I don't know that much about nuclear physics and whether an underground reaction would be well contained when it comes to certain traces. But, not leaving dust, not spreading dust, but being a well-contained reaction. So that's I'll leave it as a question since I really don't know anything about this. Over, out.
So, sorry, that wasn't part of what I'm talking about tonight. So, but since you raised the issue, I suspect that we all know that there was a large amount of molten iron that was down there. We don't know the temperatures. We don't know. We just know that it was really, really hot with the nanothermites continuing to react, and that could have melted some of the rock or carved it out. But that's not part of my presentation, and I haven't looked at that. I know it's an issue. So thanks for your question, and let's move on to the next.
Yep. Please make sure that your questions are relevant to the material that was presented tonight. Tom Sweden there. Tom Sweden?
Okay.
Star six,
yeah, I just unmuted myself.
Okay.
I have one comment. The photograph of that, what I would call classified pit at the in the lower levels is in Judy Woods's book. She, of course, attributed it to a bizarre cause, but that's where you can see it if you're interested in looking at it. It's a beautiful picture. Another thing, if we can't trust NIST and its analysis of the collapse of the World Trade Center buildings, then perhaps we can't trust the U.S. Geologic Survey's analysis of the dust, just saying. And another comment is that the little spheres of iron that are found in the dust are iron. They're not alloys of steel or alloys of iron. They're pure iron, as you would see in a thermite or nanothermite reaction. And they're spheres, which would mean that they were liquid falling in air and hardening in a droplet form. I am not giving up on the concept of possibly there being a nuclear event that day. I don't know if there's such a thing as a clean nuclear weapon, or if there was perhaps a fusion reaction rather than a fission reaction. Seems unlikely to me with my limited knowledge. But the other thing that I would like to bring up is a lot of the people that are suffering, the people that worked on the pile are suffering from illnesses that could be, that are very difficult to explain with any other kind of industrial exposure. The main one being young people developing what's called multiple myeloma, which is a plasma cell cancer in the bone marrow that usually is seen in elderly people, but is seen in large numbers of people.
Tom, ask any other questions that he raised tonight, which is the question of what was in the dust. Do you have a question or a comment about what was in the dust?
My only comment about what was in the dust is that I don't necessarily trust the USGS. And that doesn't rule out the possibility that there were things in the dust that we don't know about.
Okay. Point taken. You want to comment on that, Wayne?
Yeah, what I'll simply say is the samples were taken back and they were analyzed. There are, in many of the things that have been observed, they were surprising.
the thing that, for example, the EPA, Christy Whitman said, not a problem with this, all this really, really terrible stuff in the air. Not a problem. Go about stopping. Everything's fine. So the analysis and the data that they that was underlying her decision, she apparently didn't look at it. Didn't know what to make of it if she saw it, because it was really terrible stuff. We know what the data was. We just know that she said, ignore it, right? So the data seems to be pretty good that was done by, after the fact, because people were watching and looking over this, but it was the interpretation of it. And I guess that's where I'll stand on that. The data seems to be consistent, and it's just the interpretation by our fearless leaders that is what I call the question more than the data. So, thanks. Next question.
Yep, Chuck Cohen.
Hi, can you all hear me?
Yep.
Okay. One of the reports that I got from some of the other researchers, such as Jeff Frager and Don Fox, was about World Trade Center 6 having 55 times background radiation from tritium. And also, that was after they had put millions of gallons of water and diluted the entire contents of World Trade Center 6. So I would say that you said also, while you were talking, that there was a high contamination down the river there. That's where all that water went to. They put water on there for 2 or 3 days. And when you talk about millions of gallons going in there, that's a great, 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 super, super colossal dilution. And you still got 55 times background tritium. And also, yes. A proof of nuclear, another one, a total admission by the government. This was like in your face. We are looking for radiation. We're wearing hazmat suits all over the World Trade Center. We got these Geiger counters and we're checking counts. Okay, those are in pictures all over the internet. So to me, that's a lot of proof.
So let me address the issues that I think I heard. First of all, Indian Point that has very high levels is upstream, not downstream. And it's 20 miles up the Hudson River. The tritium samples, as I recall, I don't have the dates here, but I believe that they were within the first few days, not after they had poured millions and millions and millions of gallons. They were in two locations, in a stairwell and in a sewer. And again, the hypothesis, what these people were looking for were the remnants of night scopes, things like that, leaked.
That wouldn't give you 55 times over. That wouldn't give you 55 times over. Not to
it depends. If you take small samples the reason you take many different samples, and they took many samples from around the area, Bronx, Queens, Manhattan, Brooklyn.
Well, this was specifically World Trade Center 6.
I want to answer the question.
Okay. You can just do a follow-up if you're okay, Roger. I'm sorry, Chuck.
Let me just say this. All the tritium levels around the World Trade Center and all the other ones, the highest one that you can find is 210 picocuries per liter, which is not far above background. There are only two small locations that were sunk. And the reason you take many different samples is you want to see what the dispersion. If they were all at 3,500 or higher, then you'd say, whoa, there's a problem. But they were looking for stuff that would have settled into the basement, into the lower levels, and that's what they were looking for. And they found something. If you take a look at the concentrations are, things that you worry about, 600,000 picocuries per liter, those are big numbers. So, but I'd like to move on to the next question. You can do a follow-up if you need it, if we have time. Over. Next.
Well, I did say to him that he could ask a follow-up question to give you time to respond. So, did you want to ask something else to Chuck, or did you have satisfied your question?
The dust samples, well, this was in the water. The 55X tritium was in the water. Although this ain't direct, I would say it's not like... It's like in your face. What are they wearing? You got probably a few dozen people from the government wearing hazmat suits and Geiger counters all over the place. What in the world would you have a Geiger counter there for if you have a normal gravity collapse? Or even if you have thermite. Thermite don't radiate. They radiate heat, well, not radiate.
Okay, I think that's just a clear question. Go ahead, please.
Well, you know, first of all, there are radioactive sources for in buildings, as I understand it. You know, medical equipment uses radioactive sources. I can't address all the issues, but there are radioactive sources in doctor's offices, and even when you go to your friendly dentist, he's got something that's gonna that I think might be radioactive. But so we don't know what they were looking for. But the hazmat suit, as I understand, they didn't start using that until 2 weeks later. That's all. So, thanks.
Okay. Roger, you're next.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This may be a very short question. I've listened to Christopher Boland talk on a number of occasions, and his thoughts are that depleted uranium was used from pods from the planes that went into the towers. Is there anything in any of this evidence that might support Christopher Boland's thoughts that depleted uranium was used?
No, I don't think that there. I don't think there is actually any anything to support it. If you took a look at the amounts of uranium that are in the that I showed on I forget what slide it is, but my slide 27. You can see that the samples are very different from what you would expect. But the depleted uranium weapons are probably most likely to have a clump of this depleted uranium and not the dust, I would suspect. Although I don't know. I don't think this either supports or unsupports the depleted uranium, use of depleted uranium. I don't think it does either.
Okay. And Barbara, you next?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, thanks for the presentation, Wayne. I want to make three main points anyway. The first is, the reason that the possibility, not the claim of, but the possibility of some nuclear event at the World Trade Center complex, not just building,
Barbara, could you start over again? Can you please start over again? I was trying to listen and someone coughed when you were saying something.
Star 6 if you're not Barbara or Wayne, please. Star 6.
Okay, you want me to start over?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay. I just want to make 3 points. The first is, in the 9/11 Museum virtual walking tour, there is a short segment on the possibility, not the claim of, but the possibility of a clear event of some kind in the entire World Trade Center complex, not specifying any building, for the following reason. First, and it's made explicit in the voiceover, walking tour. First, precisely, for the main reason that Wayne has already mentioned, the U.S. Geological Survey analysis did not, either didn't look for, or it has not told us that it looked for, the isotopes, which is what's important. They just looked at the concentration of the elements per se. They would have had to have told us, if they looked for the isotopes, for there to be affirmative evidence of any kind of nuclear event. So put the other way, it doesn't rule it out. U.S. Geological Survey concentrations do not rule them. That's number one. Number two, my understanding is, and I'd like to hear from Jim Fletcher or no, my understanding, and this is why it's in the walking tour as a possibility, not a claim of fact, that what's important is the pairings of certain elements in the concentration system if they were the isotopes. And that is made explicit in the walking tour. Finally, I don't want anyone to think that I have even thought or claim in the walking tour or anywhere else that the claim is that I believe that the evidence shows that there was nuclear demolition of the two twin towers. Absolutely not. So those are my comments.
I'm sorry. I didn't get the, after you talked about the element pairings being significant and the reasons, one of the key reasons you put it in there, there was a third reason. I mean, that's all I got. Then there was a bit more background noise. What was the third item?
No, the third item is simply totally separate from the content, the content of that said the walking tour. I don't want you to lead anyone to believe that the walking tour claims or Cleaver claims that the evidence is the walking tour, the pairs and the fact that the USGS did not look for or didn't tell us if they looked for isotopes of the elements, the pairings of the isotopes. I'm just claiming the walking tour does not claim that the World Center Towers 1 and 2 were brought down by any kind of nuclear event. Does not claim that.
So, I don't know quite how to respond to all these to your comments. The walking tour does have that. The pairing of the elements basically just means that co-located with different elements or within a dust sample, there may have been two things in which the barium and strontium were together. You know, a light bulb that had those kind of two things landed in that sample, largely in that area, and created something that was a little different. And if you look at the most of them, they're all
paired elements that point towards the possibility, not the claim of, but the possibility that's not ruled out because the USGS analysis did not look for isotopes, or
yes,
that they could tell us.
And I understand
the whole segment of the walking tour makes it clear that the possibility remains.
But I understand that. But I also we've actually had a discussion on this conference call, and I was my understanding you were going to remove that. It's never got removed because most people thought that it detracted from all the really good stuff that was in it.
Never promised that I would remove it from all samples of the or all versions of the walking tour. But if you would like that part removed from what is on the website, I will ask my videographer to do that. It's not critical.
Well, it's a real problem for me to elevate something in which there is which something that is as obscure and not conclusive on anything to be tied in with something so conclusive as the free fall of Building 7 and other things. So
I understand that's your position, Wayne, and I'm willing to do it for the CAP website. You and I simply disagree about whether it's important. And I just would like to point out that you really go out of your way, not only on this, but on the Pentagon issue, to basically say, there's nothing here, folks. This is the official story and just I really think that we need to put the burden of proof on government to prove that these claims are not true, that these claims
okay,
are not
Barbara,
true.
Okay,
I'm happy to take it out of the chapter.
Yeah, Barbara, we have to move on. Skip, did you want to make a last comment?
No, I'm done. Did you have a question?
Okay. Yes, I just wanted to ask you about
this. Barton, you cut me off. You didn't give me a chance. I was supposed to be on the list.
Who? Barton.
Who?
Barton Drew.
It's really
Barton,
quick.
I never acknowledged it, Barton. Go ahead if you want to answer.
Well,
Barton.
I certainly did say it. Go listen. Say that.
Try to make it brief, please.
Oh, very
fast.
Veterans Today has relatively recently done an extensive series on the history and evolution of nukes, and apparently they've gotten very small, very cheap, and apparently everybody's using them in place of conventional weapons, which are just too damn heavy, and these are cheap enough they just use them everywhere. And I wonder if that's changed what's going to be left over afterwards, and people who are saying no nukes were there are thinking about the bigger, nastier ones of yesteryear. And whether the newer little ones are much cleaner. I remember the Bali Island blast, they were saying basically those small little tactical nukes only give off basically alpha radiation, which is going to then be washed away at the next rainstorm. And so the things you normally would find afterwards, you're not going to find after these small ones. And I wonder if the people who are saying no nukes happened there are thinking in terms of the traditional big guys, or whether they're talking about or know about enough details about the small, whatever they're calling them now, but there's a long series of this in Veterans Today, not that far back. But you won't find it on the website normally. You got to go dig for it. That's it.
Yeah, I've got no reply to that. It wasn't what I was prepared for. So thanks, Ken.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, I just wanted to respond to Paul's earlier question, contextualize this. I mean, really, Paul, it has to do with. The claims of those who support the meaning hypothesis that the elemental evidence points in that direction, and the element sounds as it does, and basically what Wayne is presenting is a refutation of that assertion. Okay, so that's the contextualization that I think you were looking for. It has nothing to do with any other hypothesis that I am aware of, although I'm certain other hypotheses may rely on this evidence as well. I don't really have any other questions. Thank you, Wayne, for the presentation and taking the time to enlighten us about this. And I don't think we've heard the end of this. I did post to the list today some questions from one Heinz Palmer from Germany, who had 6 questions for Wayne to answer regarding his presentation, so I'm hopeful that Wayne will respond in kind to these questions on the listserv, and then I will forward them to Mr. Palmer. Okay.
I just want to simply say, in kind of in response to Barbara, I'm an engineer. I'm a, mm-hmm. you know, I just want to see what the evidence shows, and if someone says that the moon's made of blue cheese, I want to. Well, how do you know that? Why do you say that? And, you know,
That's not in your presentation. That's a response. That's not within the framework of your evidence, and you don't have any responses. That's fine, you know, if that's the case. Jim Fetzer has expressed an interest in pursuing this question further from the other side of the question, and he's inviting a debate as well, so we may see something down the line on this further. So thank you again, Wayne, for your careful presentation, and we'll now move on. Craig, are you back on the call?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Okay, so we can now move back into where we were on the agenda when Craig left, and that is the question of David Plessinger and the teleconference. So there are 3 people making this motion, so it doesn't require a second. Craig, if you want to go ahead and begin, and then we'll take a sec to discuss it. Go ahead, Craig.
Sure. On our August teleconference, Dave accused Kelly David, the COO of 8911 Truth, of being a police agent. He was offered the opportunity on the call and also on the listserv in the between then and now to prove this allegation, and he could not. Not only would he not retract his remarks, but he's created a website to smear Kelly's name further, and I understand that he's contacting a lot of people and telling them that Kelly is a government agent of some kind. Subsequent to this, David issued a series of threats against the teleconference. In addition to calling us all sycophants and cowards with no integrity, he has threatened to cause problems for us, as he has done to 3 other business entities. And the quote, is if you don't think I can cause serious problems, I am happy to discuss how I responded to three business entities who were unfair to me. But you know, much worse than that was a particular statement that he made on one of the listserv messages, and this was all in capital letters, warning, if I am not allowed to have this presentation, and this was referring to him wanting to speak about, again, about the 89/11 truth issues that he is concerned about, he said, if I am not allowed to have this presentation or if I am banned from the call, I promise I will go to adversaries of the truth movement to assist them. Now, to me, that crosses a line that goes way beyond any line I can imagine us having. And I realize there are people on the call that haven't been around for a while and perhaps are here to support Dave, and maybe you haven't been sort of listening to what we've been dealing with in the last few weeks and months. But to me, that is just absolutely beyond the pale. And for that, and I would be happy to elaborate if necessary. But I think that basically, also he said that he wants to come on every single call and raise the same issue. He wants to come on every call. So that's something for us to look forward to. So that's why we're moving the DBXL to the teleconference, effective immediately. Thank you.
Okay, before we take a stack, I need to make a quick correction of something that Craig has said here. Dave did not publish that statement to the listserv. He wrote it in an email message to me, and I published it on the listserv. So it did come from Dave, but it was not published to the listserv. It was published to me, and I copied it to the listserv. Okay.
Okay.
So with that clarification, then, who would like to speak to this question?
This is Mike Marino.
I'm sorry.
Paul Zaremka, on point of order.
One moment, Paul. Who was the first person that spoke?
Mike Marino.
Okay, Paul, your point of order, please.
My point of order is this is out of order because there's no documentation attached to the motion. It's just simply, basically, for the rest of us who don't watch this carefully, it's hearsay.
Why is something that's wait a minute. The motion is to
expel a member
teleconference. Why does it need to be accompanied by documentation?
I don't know if the statement being made allegedly about him are accurate or not accurate, no more than I do about when the government says things about the hijackers.
That's not a point of order that I'm willing to recognize. You can challenge me on that if you want, but you're simply challenging the credibility of the people who are speaking.
Challenge me on
all right. So let's move on then to who would like to be on. You want to challenge? Okay, fine. I've overruled the point of order because the claim is that documentation is required for this motion, and I'm arguing that it's not. We'll take a vote on the question. I'll tie to
question.
In favor of
wait,
the
can I make a
question.
Comment?
Question. Question.
Marina, can I make a comment? I would think that we should give him a chance to change because everybody can change.
No. That comment's out of order. We're now on the question of whether or not my ruling on this point of order is correct. That's all we're talking about right now. Anything else is out of order. So we're going to take a vote on whether or
question.
Not.
Question. This is Tom Tweeden. I have a question. Did I understand someone to say that David Schlesinger made the statement and stands behind the statement that if he is not allowed to continue on the call, that he will do what he can to in ways that he can to damage the 9/11 truth movement? Is that what I thought I heard said?
Yes, he said that in writing.
Can that be confirmed by Dave Schlesinger at this time?
Very specifically, I will go after AE-911 Truth 501c3, which would mean they could not legitimately be considered a nonprofit. That's the specific focus. If I'm expelled.
Nothing else.
I have a question. Mike Marino. Dave Schlesinger, can you provide any evidence that Kelly David is, in fact, I think you said police agent, or words to that effect?
Well, I asked the question, but I did write a 6,000-word blog, which is that evidence, which is being described as irrelevant, and that was directly in response to the request for evidence. And George Ripley's email corroborates a little bit of it.
I'm not familiar with that reply or that information, and I was not privy to the previous information from previous days. Could someone who is more familiar with this subject add something to this? Because the accusations are serious, and I think that given our small numbers of people who are trying to seek the truth, we should be cautious about who we eliminate. And at the same time, if the accusations against someone are not true, certainly that's also equally important to know about. Can someone elaborate on this?
One moment, please. This is Ken. I was just out from the call, and I've just returned. I'm not sure what's going on right now. We're about to vote on the point of order. Okay, the point of order was that raised that the motion is out of order because it has no documentation, and I overrule the point of order. So we're voting whether or not to sustain my overruling or whether or not we're going to allow the point of order and dismiss the motion because it is unaccompanied by documentation. So, all in favor of sustaining the chair decision that the motion is valid despite the fact that it has no documentation attached, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay.
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 Nay. Wait, wait. Which is the nay and which is the aye?
Okay, I believe the ayes have it, and the motion is sustained. Does anybody want to challenge that?
Roll call.
Okay, we'll have to go to the roll call then. Kurt, please call the roll. And the people who are here at the invitation of James Spencer are not eligible to vote on this question. And anybody who's here for the first time is also not eligible to vote. Unless you were invited.
Even if they're on the list?
If they're on the list, they're welcome to vote. They have to be on the list. Or have been invited, yes.
Just call names that are eligible voters.
Yeah, just call the eligible voters, please.
Well, that's a lot of people who aren't here. It'll take a lot longer.
Well,
I have a clarification question on this motion, Barbara.
Yes, go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, I believe the claim has been made by someone. I lost the charge on my phone and had to go out and come back, so I don't know who it was. But I believe I heard a claim made when I came back on to the effect that there's no documentation for this. There's been multiple documentation going back and forth in a very long email thread. So if the claim there's no documentation,
Barbara, that's not a clarification question. That's a statement, and we can't do that right now. But so right now we're just
so you
dealing
could
with the point of order.
Clarify what you mean by documentation.
Okay, that's fair. Paul, you want to answer the question, what do you mean by documentation?
Is that the motion should have been presented with documentation to the voters, Paul.
This is Lorenzo. There's an awful lot of background noise again.
Yes, there is. Please, we can't get ready to mute now because we're about to vote, so we'll have to put up with it. Kurt, call the roll, please.
Okay, I don't have everybody memorized who's eligible and who isn't, so you're going to have to help me out here, Ken, with that part. I'll read names, and you can intervene if you need to. Diana Castillo, Sheila Casey. Sorry, Diana Castillo.
Diana.
Are you there, Diana?
Yeah,
I am, sorry.
Yeah. Just to clarify again, a yes vote sustains the vote of the ruling of the chair, and a no vote sustains the point of order.
So a no vote means that he will not be kicked off, and a yes vote means he will be kicked off?
No, we're not voting on that. We're voting on a point of order. A point of order that says that only that a motion needs to be accompanied by documentation in order to be considered by the teleconference.
Okay. And I have to vote on that?
Yes. Or you can pass. Yeah, it doesn't matter. You have to vote.
Okay, I abstain. I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, you can abstain.
Thanks.
Okay, Sheila Casey. Sheila, are you there? Okay,
Sheila,
Jonathan Mark. Jonathan?
Star 650 muted, folks. Star 61 muted.
Okay, well, I'll keep going and we'll come back to them if they're... Barton Bruce?
Nay.
Runyon Wild?
So, my vote says that I consider there's sufficient documentation available, so that would be nay?
No,
that would be yay.
Sufficient documentation, and that would be yay. Yeah.
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 Okay. Xander Arena. Xander? Okay. Tom Tweeden. Is Tom there?
Sufficient documentation.
Did you say there is? There is, Tom?
Is sufficient documentation.
Got it. Great. David Cole.
Yes.
Okay. Kat McGuire.
Kat McGuire.
Sorry.
Sufficient documentation. I'm sorry, repeat that, Kat. Kat, was that you?
Yes.
Okay.
Kat?
There's a bunch of people talking. I don't understand
why. If you've got background conversation, would you please start switching to what you're from the vote, please? There's a lot of background conversation going on here. Star switching to what you.
So, Kat, are you a yes or a no?
Yay.
Okay. Lorenzo? Are you there, Lorenzo?
Yes, I am now.
Okay. Okay. Sue Serpa?
Yay.
P.S. Soto? P.F., are you there?
Yay. Yay.
Yay, okay. Frank Kolopko? Sorry,
yes.
TF, did you say nay?
No, I said yay.
You said yay, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Kolopko?
Yes.
Okay, Robert Cable?
No.
Okay, Lynn Bradbury?
That's same.
Okay, John O'Malley?
Abstain.
Ed Jewett.
Abstain.
Pablo Novi. Pablo, are you there? Okay, well, Pablo? Okay, Ben Collett?
No.
Okay, Barbara Honegger?
Yes.
Chuck Baldwin.
I'm first time.
Okay. Paul Zaremkin, well, we, okay, you're a no. Cheryl Curtis.
Yes.
Okay, I'm a yes. Barry Zwicker. Barry, are you there? Okay, well, Jerry Turner?
Abstain.
Anna Yeisler?
Abstain.
Jack Graham? Jack, are you there? Okay, James Hufford?
Yes.
Mike Marino?
Yes.
Homolk? Is Homolk there? Okay, Wayne Kosky? Wayne, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Mark Hightower?
I am not eligible to vote.
Okay. Mark. Dave Schlesinger?
Nay.
Okay, Chuck Smith?
Abstain.
Okay, Steve Dayak? Is Steve still there?
Craig, this is Jim Fester. I just joined, but I think if this is the vote to ban Dave Schlesinger, I'd like to vote.
No, it's not that vote now, and it would be irrelevant anyway because you're late to the call, so you won't be able to vote on that question anyway.
Okay, so Roger Boring. You there, Roger?
All six are three headed. I am now here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What's your vote, Roger?
I'm sorry. I was promised that this would be happening before 6 o'clock. Can I hear what the vote is about? Do we title of the vote? Yes, no, what?
Ken, you want to fill Roger in?
Roger? I'm
being
questioned.
Well, I didn't know what the vote is today. I put the phone down since I'm at dinner now. Can you please tell me what?
Yes, we're voting on whether or not this is going to really get the chair that the motion is valid without documentation attached.
I'm going to vote that it's not valid.
Okay.
Roger, could you star 6 your phone? You're going back to dinner because I think
sure.
There's background noise.
Okay, so I don't know if there's anybody that I tried to get before, like Sheila, Jonathan, Xander.
If you'd like to vote and you haven't had a chance and you haven't voted yet and your phone is muted, star 6 and say who you are and add your name to the roster. Anybody not voting yet that would like to vote?
This is Mike Marino. I voted yes. I'd like to change it to no.
Yeah, I want to change my abstention to no.
You need to identify yourself before you speak.
I'm sorry, Diana Castillo.
Okay, so is there anybody else that's not voted yet that would like to vote?
Doug Webb.
If not, then Craig, please give us a tally.
Yeah,
Craig,
do
that. Am I not allowed to vote? Is that
no, you're not. So we have a rule that unless you're here from the beginning of the discussion, you're not allowed to vote on the issue, so you're not, unfortunately.
But this is not the motion itself. This is just whether we need to have documentation for it. So it's not the main. It's not the main one.
It doesn't matter anyway because this is the other issue. So you won't be able to vote on that, obviously.
So
please tally the votes, Craig, and let us know
yep.
where we stand.
This is Susan Serpa. Can I change my vote?
We can't keep doing this all right, folks.
Yeah.
We need to really try to talk at some point.
Am I not allowed to
vote? Who just said that?
Who said they weren't allowed to vote?
Doug West.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Doug. I didn't even have you written down. Okay.
P.F. Soto, can I ask for a clarification? Wait, you're not saying that documentation isn't necessary. You're saying that it's been out there but just not attached to this latest email. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
But there weren't even any pointers to it. A lot of people have no
okay,
idea.
We don't need to discuss. We're just really trying to get the point of order clarified. And clarified here, the question is whether or not the motion is valid without the documents, without additional documentation. That's all. According to Paul, it needs more documentation than has been offered, and I'm saying that it's sufficient to stand as a motion by itself without the documentation.
So, Doug, what is your vote?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to start counting again. Is anybody going to change their vote at this point? Okay, give me a moment.
Just one, you know, Gregory Longo is on the call, and I don't think he voted. Greg, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. So what would your vote be, Gregory?
Yes.
Okay. How do you spell your last name, Gregory?
L-O-N-G-O.
Got it. Okay. So give me a moment here. James Hufford?
Yeah.
How did you vote? I didn't write it very clearly.
I voted yes.
Yes, okay. Okay, so that's the yeses. Hold on. Okay, I have 14 yeses and 9 noes, and I haven't counted the abstentions yet.
Well, it won't matter because this is simply a simple majority suffices.
Right.
No, but still you need it for the chair.
There's 11 noes.
Well, we know that there's 14 yeses, so I think that's...
Are you going to accuse me of doing that on purpose again, Dave?
Whoa.
You voted on purpose last time, but this time it's clear vote. So it's irrelevant.
So you're accusing me again.
Not this time.
Let's not go there. Let's just get a clear count. What do you have, Craig, as a final count?
I have if he says there's 11, that means I got to recount, to be sure.
No.
But if
he's
a clear majority...
No, you don't. No, you don't have to recount.
Give the best of your house to the best of your ability, Craig, and we'll go with that, whatever that is, okay?
Well...
If somebody wants to challenge it, then we'll note that for the record.
Why don't you call out the names of the yays and call out the names of the noes?
There's no need. No, it's
okay.
Clear. We should move on. Some people have
okay.
to leave.
But we still need the abstention.
Do we really, Paul? Is that really?
Five,
do we need to
there were seven abstentions. There were seven abstentions.
Abstentions are abstentions. We're only looking for a majority of the votes voting, okay?
I didn't claim that it didn't pass. I didn't complain that the ruling. I just wanted to have a clear record,
well,
that's all.
We can notice for the record how many abstentions there were, yes, of course.
That's
okay.
All I meant.
Okay, gotcha.
Seven.
Yes.
Can we move on?
Yeah.
We're waiting for Craig to give us a final vote count. What is it, Craig?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had just agreed that it was a majority.
You want me
to double check it? That's what I said before.
I just want the final count for the record, Craig. Just the final count for the record so we can move on.
All three.
What is your tally?
Craig.
My tally is 14 and 9, but
okay.
If I've missed any, then I want to catch them.
How many extensions
doesn't matter.
For the record? How many extensions for the record, Craig?
Seven. All right, give me a second.
So,
hello?
I have 8.
Craig, while you're doing that...
So a majority have voted to sustain the chair, so we'll move on now. The motion is valid for our purposes, and we're going to now take a tack to speak to the motion. Who would like to be on the staff to speak?
Cheryl.
Barry.
Barry's with
Barry.
Barbara.
Who else?
Craig.
Craig, no, are you pretty motivated? But I'll put you back on.
Okay.
Later.
Ed Jewett.
I'm sorry, who else?
Ed Jewett,
who else?
Diana Castillo.
Diana...
Castillo.
Okay. All right. Who else? All right, so Cheryl,
Cable. I'd like to speak last. Dave Schlesinger here.
Dave Schlesinger, who else?
But I'd like to speak last, please.
I'm not going to do that, Craig. Do you want to speak or not? I'm not giving anybody the opportunity to speak first or last, okay? I'm just putting people down on the staff. If you want to speak, I'll put your name down, okay?
Did you get my name, Bob Cable?
I'm sorry, who else?
George, are you going to speak? Are you here?
I've got Cheryl, Barry, Barbara, Ed, Diane, and Dave. Anybody else who want to be on the staff?
Bob Cable.
On the, who?
Robert Cable.
Robert Cable?
Yeah, Bob Cable.
All right, Cheryl, you first.
Yeah, I just want to say, to the people, I've known Dave for years, and I like Dave, but I think, as being part of this listserv, when someone says, if you don't put me on your agenda every month to talk about what I want to talk about, I'm going to then, turn around and destroy the truth movement in any way I can, that's a real problem. It's like he's holding us hostage to what he's going to do to harm us if we don't give him his way. And that feels very wrong to me. And so for those of you who are supporting Dave in this, how would you handle that? I really want to hear people. What would you do with that? Is that okay with you if you were making the decision, to have Dave treating you that way? I mean, he is treating you all that way. He's threatening all of us if we don't give him his way. And I just think that, there's a better way to do that. And I want to know what you would do.
I think you have overstated that his objection.
Whoa. Only Cheryl has the right to speak right now. Are you finished, Cheryl?
Okay. I'm finished, yes. Thank you.
Okay, Barry. Director's next. Barry's director's next on the set.
Yeah, thank you. I'm afraid that Dave has engaged in disruption. Disruption is what government agents specialize in. They're assigned to do it. I'm not saying he's a government agent, but I'm saying that disruption is, in this case, practically fatal. If it's like in a medical emergency with an individual, and in this case, amputation is indicated. And the bullying and the promise to disrupt have even been indicated a few minutes ago when Dave started to say that he wanted to speak last. He doesn't want to play by the rules. So I've been around a lot of organizations, and I'm over 80, and I don't think I've ever seen an individual
who has been more disrupted than Dave. Yeah, I've met him too, and he's nice sometimes. That's beside the point. An organization like this really cannot countenance this kind of bullying and disruption. That's it.
Thank you, Barry. Barbara, are you next?
Yes, I'd just like to say for those of you who are new to this discussion before the vote, that there is voluminous documentation from Dave's own threatening, extortionary emails. We will be happy, I'm sure Craig will send them all to you. Please believe those of us who had to read through them for months and months that he threatened to destroy the 9/11 truth and destroy architects and engineers of the 9/11 truth if he doesn't get his way about everything. I cannot tolerate that behavior. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. And Ed Jewett.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry for the delay. I concur with everything that everybody said so far. I think that's well said. I'm new to the question, but what I've heard from the short while that I've been studying it just underlines everything that has just been said. The only question I was going to ask is for Dave to define what he meant by the term, quote, police agent, if it's not perfectly clear. And secondly, to just simply say that what we are talking about is something akin to libel or slander. I'm not a lawyer. And I don't think we want any group, our group, to be a platform for that. I'll yield now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dave. All right.
I was going to say I've known David a long time, and I know he does a lot of good work. I also know he has a temper, and it seems like that temper gets misdirected. So I would suggest if we could do something like put on a six-month listen-only basis, where he could only listen for 6 months, at the same time have some kind of an outlet where he could have a conversation with some of us. I would be willing to talk to him, you know, to see how he can work out his anger without being disruptive.
Diane, are you proposing an amendment to the motion?
Yeah.
You're proposing that instead of expulsion, that he be put on 6 months of listen only?
Yeah.
Let me ask the makers of the motion, do you consider that a friendly amendment?
No.
Okay. Then we'll have to vote on the amendment. For now, we need to discuss the amendment. Anyone else on the staff to speak will come back to you after we speak to the question of the amendment. So now we are starting a new staff to speak to the amendment. Who would like to be on the staff to speak to the amendment?
Craig.
Who else?
Wayne.
Who else?
I think you need him first.
I'm sorry?
You need a second to the amendment before you move forward.
Thank you. No, you're absolutely correct. Thank you for the correction. Absolutely correct. Is there a second to the amendment to amend this motion?
I second it.
Okay. Now it's been moved and seconded. So I have Barbara, Craig, Wayne. Who else would like to speak to the question?
Barry, Mike.
Barry?
Mike.
Who else?
Chuck Smith.
Chuck Smith. Okay. Who else?
Mike Marino.
Mike Marino. Who else? Okay. Barbara, you first.
I'm sorry. Was that me, Barbara?
Yes. Barbara, you first.
Oh, okay. I just plead with people to vote against this amendment. For those of us who are on the call every time and read all of the email threats, we've been subjected to Dave's verbal bullying and extortion for so long that it is so disruptive that just the idea of having Dave in the background on a call makes me nervous. And if we go ahead with the regular motion and defeat this amendment, we can always vote amongst ourselves for the amendment later if we decide to. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I agree with Ms. Barbara. I would plead with people to vote no on this. And I want to make two quick points. One is that on this very call, if people were noticing, he said he will go after AE-911 Truth's 501c status if he's banned from this call. Now just think about that for a second. He's saying our decision will determine whether he goes after AE-911 Truth. Second point, he accused me tonight on this call. He's repeated what he did last month when he accused Kelly David. He's accused me of deliberately miscounting votes last month. Okay? So this is not going to stop. If people think that giving him a timeout is going to make a difference, it's not. Okay? I'm pissed off at being accused that way, just as Kelly David is. There.
Thank you, Kurt. Wayne, you're next.
My main question was, what would be the criteria for at the end of the 6-month period? I think you're just kicking the can down the road. Over.
Thank you. And Barry?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's a history with Dave, too, and that has to be taken into account. He's been a repeat offender. He's recalcitrant. He's had abundant opportunity to change his ways. He appears unable to do so, and so therefore, I don't think he deserves parole or a second chance. I think this has to be followed through the amputation.
Thank you. And Chuck, you're next.
Yeah, I've known David a long time, like Diana, and a few architects and engineers and all that, and in my conversations with David in the last month or so have led me to see that David's really upset at the fact that he has what he feels are really good outreach strategies, and that he has tried very hard to get AE to pay attention to him, and he feels like he's being sabotaged by Kelly. Now, Dave, in all the years I've known about him and talked with him on these calls, outreach is his thing. I mean, he lives, eats, sleeps, and breathes that, and he's rebuffed by the people who are dedicated to his blog.
Bad sound. Bad sound.
I cannot hear you. I cannot hear the person.
Chuck, we can't hear you. Your volume is way too low.
Really?
Now we can hear you. Now we can hear you.
Okay. David is outreach and I can only put my, I'm empathetic, and so I can only, even though David is, can be certainly be obnoxious, I'm empathetic to feeling like, Jesus, the tool I've been using all these years is all of a sudden rejected by my main people. I'd be, emotionally distraught. So where does he go? Apparently he goes to this call. I didn't even know about this call until a couple of weeks ago. So he goes to this call where he's busy airing his dirty laundry with AD on you people where it doesn't belong at all. But once again, in my having done this psychology thing, I see that he's in flight. He's like a wounded animal, and here I'm only talking about this situation. Everybody else's experiences with David on other situations all stand on their own. It's only about this situation, from what I see. The answer, just to cut to the answer here, is that David seemed to agree with me that what he really wanted was for everybody to pay attention to his outreach strategy. So I suggested to him that he stand back and shut up and take a few months and actually document, like Wayne did, I think it was Wayne, today, document his outreach strategies and make a presentation to everybody. And then, go from there. And so basically forgets all this character assassination because he's been rejected, pull the thorn from his paw, and shut up. and get serious about this and do a scientific as he can presentation on outreach to this group of wonderful, caring people who don't care about each other's emotionalism. We're all on a journey to, you know, solve these problems. And David's very valuable in outreach. I hate to lose him just because, you know, he has serious, you know, issues that he could do well to look at. Nonetheless, that's my answer, is that he was put on kind of hold, like Diana said, and he needs to remove the thorn from his paw and design this paper and show everybody that he's not just a lunatic, that he has a real strategy and that he shouldn't have been rejected, and that maybe Kelly needs to be looked at as somebody who's a gatekeeper. I think that's his position primarily. So I'm saying, yeah, give him 6 months and expect him to deliver the goods or forget it.
Okay, and Mike Marino.
I was invited to this call a couple days ago by Dave, and I've known Dave from some years ago with A&E, where I was working closely at the time. And I now am finding out things that I did not know. This was brought out by Barbara and Barry, and I'm rather sad to learn that Dave has been disruptive in ways that I was not familiar with. I'm sad to learn this. I agree with the person who just spoke. I'm sorry, I missed your name, with the Demolitions for Truth. I tend to agree with what you've said. At the same time, I don't know, this is not an easy thing. I'm in a hard spot right now because I've heard what Barbara said and what Barry said, and the suggestion that really and truly Dave has crossed the bounds.
Okay.
And at the same time, not having been here, I hate to say he's got to go, but I may abstain when the actual vote comes. But I wanted to voice my thoughts for whoever else might be in the same position that I'm in.
Dave Schlesinger?
I'll push on the stack, Dave. You're behind me. Okay. So, thank you, Mitch. And I'd just like to say to Chuck that, you know, I made the same overture to Dave many times, asking him to put his beef with 9/11/89 on the street into coherent form and to present it. We definitely have given him time to do that. He's had umpteen opportunities already being given to him on the teleconference to make his case. But unfortunately, David's preferring character assassination, insulting of the people here, and really outright slander. That we simply can't tolerate. I'm sorry to say. I'm not sorry to say. I wouldn't be part of the teleconference if it were tolerable. So we've had this issue come up before where people have accused each other of being agents, and we've always insisted on either a retraction or that they need to call. And several have had to leave. So this is not me. It's just this. I have no more to say on that except that I would encourage people to vote against the amendment and let's really deal with the issue once and for all. David, you're next.
Yes. Barbara and Barry are exaggerating wildly. It's totally unfair just because they don't agree with something I said that I was bullying. I was extremely emphatic this time.
I'm passing in. I'm going to be 2 days.
What is happening now? Somebody's talking.
Please, if you're talking, would you please star six your phone? Star six. We don't need background noise. Star six and what you have before. Star six, please. Go ahead, David.
Yes, I repeat. Barbara and Barry are not fair. They're absolutely exaggerating.
Barbara, please, let them speak.
You know, Barbara's as much of a bully as anybody. We know that.
I am not.
And, Barbara, right. Please. Barbara, please let him finish. Thank you.
Yeah. when when I was asked to prepare something, I did prepare 6,000 words about Kelly and 12,000 words about my own activism, and I sent it to the list, and it is not reasonable to say I did not respond. I did respond. And it is really absurd to claim that I didn't back up what I said. There needs to be a discussion. Particularly, it's interesting that I didn't even know from George Ripley, who is a longtime member of the DC group, that he felt that Kelly's sweetheart, Jeff Long, who was with the DC group for many years, in George's estimate, and he emailed the whole list just a few hours ago.
You're going to have to, you know, we can't take this forever. Now, come on, make your point, please, and let's move on.
It would have gone quicker if you didn't interrupt.
Jeff
was always casting aspersions and getting people to be mistrustful and making it hard to organize the group. Go look for George Ripley's email. The most important thing is this. AE is using fraud in fundraising. That's what
point
I would go
order.
After.
Point of order.
Yes.
And none
point
of you
order.
Are willing to address the issues.
Point of order. Who's raising the point of
not,
order? Well, who's raising
is,
the point of
not,
order, please?
He's not addressing...
Who's
Craig,
raising the point of order?
It's Craig.
Craig. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Craig.
Sorry, I couldn't tell if I was muted or not. I was. No, I just... He's not addressing the motion. He's talking about... You know, people that aren't even, you know, Jeff from AE, and it's got nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight.
AE has everything to do with what we're talking about, because they're the people who would be hurt.
Excuse me, David. I'm going to sustain the point of order. Okay?
AE is what you folks should be concerned about.
No, David, you don't have the floor now. I have the floor. I'm going to sustain the point of order. This is not relevant to the motion at hand, which is the question that we go with. A six-month suspension versus an expulsion. So we will therefore go ahead and take the vote on the motion to amend. All in favor of the amendment as proposed by Diane Castillo, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
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 I don't believe the nays have it. Does anybody want to challenge that? Okay, then we will accept that it was a no on the amendment. We will go back to the regular stack. I'm going to add myself to the stack. David Schlesinger is next to speak on the stack on the main motion. Go ahead, David.
The most important thing is that AE has been using fraud in fundraising, and none
point
of you are willing...
Point of order.
Point of order. Who's raising the point of order?
It's Craig again.
Craig, go ahead.
This has got nothing to do with the motion.
Oh,
the motion is Dave. Is it regards Dave's behavior. It has nothing to do with AE's behavior.
It has to do with what I'm saying I will do if I'm thrown out.
No, it doesn't. Let me give him another little bit of time to clarify that he's talking to the motion. Okay, Craig. I'm not sure that I want to sustain that at the moment. Okay.
Okay.
Where are we at now?
David, sure, your floor.
The point is that I was accused of threatening certain things, and the real threat is taking away AE's 501c3. That is the real threat. It is not true that I would destroy the movement. It is true I would do my best to take away AE's 501c3. That is the ultimate issue. None of you care that they are using fraud in their fundraising, because almost none of you would even answer my question, what percentage of unsolicited mailings do you think were opened or read? I did ask individuals that recently, but basically no one has volunteered an answer. You don't care whether they're using fraud in fundraising. In addition, it is absurd for TAP to not be given lists of petition signers, because TAP
is the outreach arm.
David, I'm going to interrupt you based on the point of order that was raised. The reasons why the people are saying they would like to have you expelled have to do with certain behaviors they've identified, okay? You're not speaking to those behaviors. You're speaking to something else entirely. And it's up to you, but I'll give you another minute or two to say what you want to say, then I'm going to have to cut you off, okay?
This is an amazing situation. I am the main person in the movement who advocates outreach to non-choir. It is a ridiculous movement, and I don't want it to be a ridiculous movement. I accuse the movement of 99% of being mainly concerned about being able to say, I told you so, if you live long enough to be vindicated. This is petty and small-minded, and we don't deserve to achieve our goals, even though I want us to. It's a ridiculous movement, and it needs to be faced by us. This is your chance to face it. If you don't, I will help make you face it from the outside. It's a ridiculous movement, and it shouldn't be. The research is great.
Okay. Thank you, David. And Robert Cable is next.
Yes, first a suggestion that in a voice vote, we vote no or yes rather than nay, yay, because it's easier to distinguish the two. I'd also like to observe that Dave is in the position vis-a-vis this group or 9/11 Truth, as we 9/11 Truthers, a minority evidently in the country, are against the establishment's view. It's ironic to find ourselves like this. I believe Dave has done a great deal of good for the movement. He has a lot of ideas, and they may be disruptive because the democratic process is that way. There's inevitably dissension, even obstruction, but I feel it has to be tolerated, that we can continue to benefit from his ideas and actions. And I'd hate to lose Dave. I think he is a little bit overwrought by being super invested in this. That's all.
Can I be added, please?
P.S.
Soto.
P.S. Soto, I was.
James, I'd like to speak.
James, I'd also. Who else? All right. It's my turn to speak. I just want to remind everybody that the major argument against David's presence and the teleconference is that he has stated that somebody else in the 9/11 Truth Movement is an agent, and he has refused to retract it, and he has refused to publish substantive proof.
I did publish it.
Excuse me, David. I was not interrupting you when you were talking, except for as a moderator. And
it's a huge lie.
No, I'd appreciate it.
It's a huge lie.
You are interrupting me. This is a typical of your bullying, by the way. It's typical of the way you bully people. And you're not going to bully here.
Disruption.
Oh, disruption. Excuse me. It's typical of the way you disrupt people. Now, David clearly called Kelly a police agent. He clearly refused to retract it. He did publish 6,000 words on the internet. It advertised it so hell wouldn't have it. But there's nothing in there that establishes that she's a police agent. And we have a standing policy on this teleconference that people do not accuse one another of being agents without cause. And we've asked people to leave in the past over this issue. And as long as I'm the moderator here, I'll leave it this way. I would not care to be the moderator of a teleconference that would commit this type of behavior. Okay? Secondly, his bullying on the listserv, and he did in fact say that he would go to the enemies of the Truth Movement. He didn't say the enemies of the 9/11 Truth, he said the enemies of the Truth Movement. If we did not allow him to have his monthly opportunity on his helicopter to prosecute the people that he wants to prosecute. So I would substantiate everything that Barbara, Craig, and others have had to say about what David has written and what he has done and the need for action because of this to protect the helicopter. That's all I have to say. P.F. Soto, you're next.
I guess I just want to share my feelings. I was tended to. I don't believe that obstruction should ever be tolerated because that's, you know, historically that's what's taken down so many movements. However, I was inclined to vote yes on removal, but after listening to Dave, and I can hear his frustration, I would just like a clarification from him as to an example of fraud, because I haven't heard that before. Is that possible?
But I'd like to answer
I think that's really off the question here. The question is whether or not David should be removed based on his behavior, okay? And whether or not he's right about a 9/11 truth fraud really has nothing to do with the behavior that he's
doing. That's ridiculous.
Okay.
No, it isn't.
Well,
ridiculous.
All right, I'm going to deny David the opportunity to answer the question, but if you'd like to challenge it, I suppose we can take a vote on it.
This is Anna Yisley. I'd like to be put on the stack. This is Anna Yisley. Anna Yisley.
And Ed Jewett, too.
Ed Jewett, okay. That's why my answer is that it's irrelevant to the question at hand, and so it's really, we're not going to take time for it. Okay? Do you have anything else you want to say, Tia?
No, I disagree that it's irrelevant, but no, that's
okay.
It.
Okay.
Appeal it.
James.
Yeah, I would like to say that when David was asked to provide evidence, instead of a summary of evidence, he gave us, 6,000 words and then 12,000 words, and that adds up to almost 60 pages, and most of us have a lot more things to do than to sift through that and look for, if he really had the goods, it wouldn't take many words. That many words, maybe a couple, 300-400 to sum it up and give it to us.
So I'm not allowed to summarize it now.
You had ample chance to summarize it, and I don't think you summarized
David, you're out of order.
It.
David,
I don't think
order.
You summarized
David,
it. You didn't even give us a synopsis of what you were saying. You just
I put
just
things in bold.
David,
I
you
put,
are
I
out
put
of
many
order.
Things in bold.
David, you are out of order.
And the other thing I'd like to say is that if someone may have great passion, but if they can't get anybody to go along with them, don't have the talent to do that over many, 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 many tries, then people are a little bit loath to keep listening and have it take up all of our time in our teleconferences. We've got a lot of things to cover, and we can't.
Not about outreach.
All right, David. If you interrupt one more time, I'm going to have to mute you.
And to answer that, I would submit that most of us on this call are doing outreach. So I don't buy that, Dave. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you, James. And let's see, Anna Yisley, you next.
I just wanted to point out that I don't know, I haven't been keeping up with all the correspondence from Dave. But what I have read seems fairly, I haven't heard any that anyone's going to investigate his allegations. It seems to me that that's how we treat whistleblowers in the American government. They're just ousted and
quieted, and the evidence, you know, nothing's ever investigated. I don't really feel an investigation in regards to Dave's claim. And I don't know how that would, so I'm, you know, leaning towards saying do the amendment to give him 6 months to articulate
the amendment,
to
the amendment
out.
Failed. Anna, the amendment failed. We're not talking about the amendment now. Okay, the amendment's closed.
All right. Well, my point is there's been very little talk about investigating his allegations, and until we do that, we're just throwing, you know, him out and his allegations out, but I don't think we've gotten any further into determining whether they're false or true.
Okay, thank you, Anna. And Ed Jewett.
Ken, can I, it's Craig, can I go at the end, or after Ed, or whenever?
I'll hit you at the end.
I'm sorry, trying to mute and unmute here.
Okay,
this is Ed Jewett.
I am
sort of underlining things that have said. I'm just going to make this statement that Dave says that we don't care if we don't read or understand what he has put forth, but at the same time, here we are involved in this group doing our own thing with regard to 9/11, doing outreach, etc., spending the time on this conference, reading the listserv, etc. So by definition, we do care. And it is not our obligation to read his work. It's his obligation to invite us or persuade us that he has a case that he has made. He hasn't apparently done that. Finally, I would say similarly, he has said he will work against 9/11 truth. We are working for 9/11 truth. That is prima facie reason for expulsion. I yield.
Thank you, Ed. And Craig.
Sorry, did you say Craig?
Yes.
Yeah. I couldn't say it better than that. That's amazing. I just want to point to one thing that when Dave says that what he really wants to do is take away AD's status, I'm going to read the exact quote from the email again. If I am not allowed to have this presentation, or if I am banned from the call, I promise I will go to the adversaries of the truth movement to assist them. So that is what he said. And the other thing is, I think is a little bit lost in all this, is that I've been accused of something just as bad as what Kelly was accused of. And on the listserv, he accused me of conspiring with Kat McGuire to plot out miscounting the vote because of something that happened at the left forum. This is what he said, and then he's repeated it tonight, that I did this on purpose. So I don't even need to ask for proof of that because you can't produce it. So I think we've heard all we need to hear about Mr. Schlesinger's behavior on this call.
Okay. Thank you, Craig.
Thanks.
Well, we've got to the end of our set, so it's now time to vote on the main motion. The main motion is expulsion of David Schlesinger from the teleconference. So all in favor, say aye. Oh, I'm sorry, star
aye.
Six. Everybody, star six if you're muted. Let's give everybody a chance to unmute. Star six, star six. Star six, to unmute. Star six. Alright. So, all in favor of expelling David from the teleconference, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
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 No.
Nay.
Nay.
Well, I think the ayes have it, but I'm not sure. So, Craig, to make this official, let's take a roll call vote, please.
Okay. Diane Castillo.
I wish there was another solution because I don't like
yes,
to
yes or no, yes or no, yes or no,
or abstain.
Yes or no.
I'll abstain.
Thank you. Okay. Okay.
I don't know if Sheila Casey's still on the call or not. Or Jonathan Mark. I guess we lost them, I guess. Barton Bruce.
No.
Okay, Runyon Wild. Not there anymore. Xander Arena. Okay, Tom Tweeden.
Abstain.
Okay. David Cole?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Pat McGuire?
Yes.
Okay, Lorenzo Fine?
Yes.
P.F. Soto?
Very conflicted equals abstain.
Okay, Frank Talopko?
Yes.
Okay, Robert Cable? Bob Cable?
No.
Okay, Lynn Bradbury?
Abstain with much caution to Dave.
Okay, John O'Malley? Not there. Ed Jewett?
Yes.
Okay, Pablo Novi? Pablo back? Okay, Ben Collett?
No.
Barbara Honegger?
Yes.
Okay, Chuck Baldwin? Up there. Okay. Paul Zaremka?
Consistent with my motion about order, I would abstain.
Okay. Cheryl Curtis?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to vote yes.
Susan Serpa was not on the roll call. She's here.
Okay. Yeah. I'll get Sue. I was going to get to Sue. Barry Zwicker?
Yes.
Jerry Turner? Up there, Annie Eisling?
No.
Okay. James Graham? Or Jack Graham, sorry? He's gone. James Hufford?
Yes.
Okay, Hamok, I think we lost earlier. Wayne Costi?
With much sadness, yes. Can I say that? Yes.
Mark Hightower?
I am not eligible to vote.
Oh, that's right.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes.
Thank you, Mark.
That's right. Thank you for reminding me of that. Dave Schlesinger?
No.
Chuck Smith? I think we said he was...
Abstained.
Abstained, okay. Steve Zayak is not there anymore. Roger Boris? Roger, are you there? How do you vote?
I am here.
Yes, and what's your vote?
If it's a vote to... House David, I'm against it.
Okay. And Doug West. Doug, you're not there? Gregory Longo?
Yes.
Okay. Did I miss anyone?
Jim Marino. Am I eligible to vote for it?
No, Jim, you're not, because you came in too late on the discussion to be eligible to vote. According to our rule, you have to be here for the beginning of a discussion in order to vote on a question.
What about Susan Serpa?
We got Susan's vote.
Mike Marino? I abstain.
Yes, Mike. Yes.
I don't think you have Serpa's vote.
I do have Kisses here, but yeah.
What about Cam?
Yeah.
I don't vote except in cases of ties.
Well, I have everybody who answered marked down. Is anybody on the call that didn't get a chance to vote?
Can you hear me? This is Pablo.
Pablo. Yes.
Did you hear my vote?
No, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you at all.
Okay. I vote yes.
Okay. Okay. I think I have everyone, do I?
Do you have Xander?
Xander didn't answer when I called him.
Okay, okay.
I think he may have left the call a while back.
All right.
Okay, so what I have now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 yeses, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 noes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 abstentions.
Okay. Then the motion carries. Dave, please drop off the call. Okay, so now, thank you all. And our last item that I think we're going to be able to take up tonight, Pablo's been very patient. His item was postponed to the last month, and we need to vote on it tonight. He's asking that we, as a teleconference, is the Unity manifesto for the 9/11 truth movement. It's been circulated in two different draft agendas, so everybody should be familiar with it. Pablo, you can say a few words to get us started, and then we'll entertain discussion. Go ahead.
Ken, just before Pablo starts, I have unfortunately had to leave the call on the dot of 11, so I'm not going to be able to record the vote for this one. Could you take that over? Okay, great.
Just, I don't have a list of people here. Can you email me?
Do you want me to do it?
Well, no, the question is, does anybody have a list of the people on the call?
I do. Cheryl,
you do? Great. Yeah, Cheryl can do it. Yeah.
Great. All right, thanks.
Craig, thanks for all your work.
Thanks, Craig.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, so hey, Pablo, the floor is yours. You can motivate your proposal, and then we'll discuss it. Go ahead.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, but your voice is very low.
Barely.
Very low. We can hardly hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you just had a discussion about outreach. What this leaflet is all about, the Unity Manifesto, is outreach. The idea is that our onus is not to prove what happened. It'd be nice if we could prove what happened, whether it was nukes or not, and thermitics or not, and planes or not, and space rays or not, etc. There's 100 controversies. This leaflet avoids all of them and addresses none of them. What it does do is address what didn't happen, what did not happen, which is the official U.S. government story, official conspiracy theory of 9/11. So in the left-hand column after the first five lines or so, it lists 27 to 33 major planks that the U.S. government has said to us was what happened on 9/11. The left-hand two-thirds of the page, that column, repeats each one of those 27 with a bonus 3, makes 33. I believe that there's no organization in the entire 9/11 truth movement that can't accept this because it avoids all the controversy. If we were to unite around this thing, and as a united movement, finally, take this message to the masses of people in the U.S., around the world, translated everything, get out millions of copies, they will get angry enough, they will rise up, and they will stop these wars of policing, and nothing else can. That's what outreach is all about. The people make history. The best that we can do is inform them and help organize them. So that, in a nutshell, is what this is all about. It's attempted to be super well organized, so it's people, places, and planes, instead of things, the things were planes. Each one of those has three. People, motive, opportunity, means. Places are three places. Planes, chronologically, before they actually supposedly took over the planes, how they actually took over the planes, and then the final places in the present, with a bonus thing being the Anthrax, Patriot, and the Afghan War. Then there's 3 points under each one, and it says yes, so there's a refutation after that. And in summary, it says that the government official conspiracy theory are false claims, shocking admissions, and more, and they're proven impossible, even ridiculous. That's my presentation. Okay, thank you, Pablo. Who would like to be on the staff for
Cheryl? Cheryl, I'll try, man.
Jim?
Jim
Fetzer? Okay, Jim. And who else?
Cheryl.
Cheryl, who else?
Barbara.
Barbara, who else?
Bob Cable.
Bob Cable, who else?
Sue Serpa.
Okay. Sue Serpa, who else? Okay, Jim, you're your first to speak. Go ahead.
Well, this is a freshman course in 9/11. I mean, it's frankly, it's ridiculous. We all knew that the government account was false within days of the events of 9/11. It was obvious it was a fabrication. We were being lied to. The Palestinians were being blamed for it before the North Tower came down. Osama bin Laden, the new Pearl Harbor. We'd have to have been complete idiots not to realize this was a complete fraud. But the idea of cutting it off at the pass with just a condemnation of the official report is hopelessly inadequate for a 9/11 truth organization, I can assure you. Scholars is absolutely dedicated to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, which, in collaboration with many others, I believe we have found, established, and put together in the book, American Nuked on 9/11, which I propose being a target article, that we should build on that by using it as a target for criticism, given the detail and specificity of the evidence there in a mask. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Cheryl, you're next.
Yeah, just in response to Jim, also, I think the point of this is to avoid controversial issues, and some that you just mentioned are very controversial in the movement, so Pablo is putting this out as something we can all agree on. And I would just like Pablo to tell me a little bit more about how do you see us using this, Pablo?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. So 50 years ago, we had a thing called the People's Petition that was very similar to this. We got 100,000 plus signatures in the city in which the Republican National Convention had planned to have their presidential nominating convention in 1972. We got 100,000 plus signatures. We also adopted a main slogan, which was out now. It was the original slogan, but it got forgotten after 5 years, kind of like we've forgotten that we all united about exposing 9/11. So the thing would be to take this leaflet everywhere, stir up a conversation. Doesn't mean that anybody can't promote nukes or anything else, but that the main focus of everybody, or at least and a very important focus of everybody, is promoting the exposing of the official government version, which is a complete lie. So we would discuss it. We would take it everywhere. Do presentations. Get the whole world right up about it because it's so clear, and none of us disagree with it. That's why it was written the way it was written. And so that's the basic thing, to stir up a mass debate around the basic point, which is that 9/11 was a false flag, an inside job, and a big lie.
Okay, thanks. So it's not for the choir, it's for newcomers and to pull people in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Barbara?
I'm really frustrated with this because the timing couldn't be worse in my mind. I love Pablo. I think he's written, you know, something that's valuable, but I think it's time is fast. And the reason is that we just had this New York conference where we've had a historic breakthrough in the movement, where we're moving forward to a real series, probably, of true legal actions against the real perpetrators. And you can't just say that the official story is false and get into court. You have to have specific evidence for specific things that did happen that point to specific defendants. And my whole focus is going to be on these legal cases and the evidence for them. So, you know, if somebody wants to do this for the non-choir, so be it. But my personal focus has to be on the legal cases for which this particular manifesto is not relevant. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. And Bob Cable.
Yes, I couldn't be at that New York conference, and I'm glad to hear that Barbara is going to pursue that. At the same time,
thank you and congratulations, Pablo, for this wonderful one-page non-choir outreach document, which is well-suited to the short attention span and the reluctance of the mass of Americans to face this huge question.
This is James. I'd like to speak.
Okay, James, I'll put you on the stack behind you. We did this up. Thank you. Sue, you're next. Sue Silva.
Sorry, I had unmuted. I like the intent of the manifesto and the focus for the non-choir. My only criticism is I would like to see it a little more or a little less explosive without the capital letters, without the explanation points and the underlines. I think that would be a turnoff to the non-choir.
Susan, would you like to make an amendment to tweak the wording on the proposal?
I have to go. Thanks, document. Everyone.
Thank you. Sue, would you like to make an amendment to tweak the wording?
Not tweak wording.
Well, the appearance or whatever it is that you're talking about?
Yes, please.
Okay. So perhaps it could be formulated as if this motion passes, we'd like to see a group get together and work on refining the appearance of the document before it's published, before it's submitted. Is that a fair way to describe what you want to do?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So Susan has proposed an amendment. Is there a second to her amendment?
I second it, Mrs. Flynn.
Okay, moved and seconded, and so therefore we will now discuss the amendment to tweak the appearance of the document. Who would like to speak to that question?
Pablo,
who else? Oh, first of all, Pablo, do you consider this a friendly amendment? Pablo?
Yeah, I was waiting for the noise to go away.
Sure.
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll put you first on the list, and who else would like to speak to it?
So this is Wayne.
Wayne, who else? Pablo, Wayne. Anybody else want to speak to the amendment? All right, I'll put myself on the list. Go ahead, Pablo.
When everybody studies a court, or reads an article and it's important to them, they make notes usually by marking up their copy, underlining, circles, little comments in the corner. This leader intends to do that for the readership, for the masses, so that after they read the thing or we talk with them about it, they look over it and they see, oh, here's the key point. Out of all these words on the left, all these words on the right, here's the key point. So it makes it more useful. That's it.
But let them do it themselves. That would be more useful.
Okay, so Pablo's talking, and Wayne, you're next.
Yeah, so mine is I think the issue is whether or not this thing can or should be reformatted. And in fact, I expect that if it's a manifesto,
well, that was mostly a big waste of time.
It's going to get repeated in many different formats and many different filings. The words are going to be what matters. That's all over. And it's gotten really noisy. Please go on mute.
Yeah, it's gotten very noisy. I'm going to ask everybody to please star 6 unless you're on the stack. Star 6.
Could you put me on the stack, please, T.F. Soto?
Yeah, I'll put you on the stack, T.F.
Thank you.
So everybody please mute. Star 6, unless you're on the stack. Still background noise.
People in the background aren't listening to hear your instruction.
Well, Okay, I think I'm eliminated. So, Wayne, were you speaking, right? Wayne?
Me? I was done.
I think what I understood Susan to be saying is that the effect of some of it is a bit more explosive, and it would be better if it were a little more nuanced or stated in a more matter-of-fact way rather than some of the maybe what we might call not inflammatory, but certainly piquant language that has shown itself, and also maybe to the appearance of it to some degree. So I just think that so she's suggesting that the committee might fine-tune it and make it more presentable. But my understanding of her motion. See, after your last speech, go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, I want to shamefully admit that I haven't read this, but so I was going to ask for a clarification of the context of this. What exactly is the vote on? What would be done with Pablo's article or outreach?
Sure, let me answer that question very clearly. He's simply asking for our endorsement of his paper, of his manifesto, okay? But his intent is for all troops to sign on as a point of unity, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that does it for the chat. Anybody else want to speak to this before we vote? Okay.
Sorry, Ken.
Sure.
The one complaint I have about it is the sections on the Pentagon. It doesn't mention that the Pentagon was attacked an hour after the Twin Towers, and that the planes were sent out over the ocean. And of course, you know that I'm of the opinion that a large plane impact is very consistent with the evidence. And so I object to that. I would not myself want to use this the way it is, but that's my, and I've communicated that to Pablo in the past. Over.
Okay. All right. So, and if anybody else that hasn't spoken yet would like to speak to this issue, we're now just talking about the amendment question, and then we'll go back to the regular chat. So,
could I just say something?
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do think it would be useful to rework it a little bit. I agree with everyone on that, that there are certain things that could make it look better and maybe take things out that Wayne just suggested. If he doesn't agree with that, then maybe we take things like that out. So, okay, that's it.
Okay.
This is Lynn. It seems that rather than have it be categorically accepted as it is, even though we want to simplify and find the common ground, that there should be some phrase leaving room, showing that we leave room for, I don't know what, amendments or more nuances of research that have occurred.
Okay, well, that might just mean that you would want to be part of the group that would be
right, reworking.
Rework it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
It's a great premise. I mean, it's a great idea to try to find the contract.
So the amendment that we are voting on now is assuming that the motion passes, that it would be reworked by a group of volunteers working with Pablo to make it more presentable to the truth movement, I guess, to the wider grouping or whatever the argument is. Okay. So if you're in favor of that motion, you will vote yes. If you're against reworking it, then you will vote no. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 All opposed, yes. Say nay. All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay. Well, the ayes have it. So if the motion passes, then it's understood that it would be with the condition that it be reworked by a group of volunteers looking at the problem. So we'll now move on to James on the chat. The main motion. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. I just say that I don't think that Pablo meant this to be what's the term, a be all and end all. I think it's just a piece of what we're doing, and I can the people that complain that what serious 9/11 truthers are doing is trying to put together a picture of aspects of what did happen. Well, I think they have a point, and that's great. But I've for one have been arguing for years that our main purpose and our main point of unity is to just the fact that the official conspiracy theory is bogus and not true, and Pablo's manifesto or whatever you call it gets right to that point, I think, and anybody who reads it and sees the point of it and accepts it is going to ask, okay, if that's what didn't happen, then what did happen, and they'll be great customers for the other people that want to do things, you know, want to tell us exactly what did happen.
Barbara, I'd like to comment on Jim's comment.
Yeah, okay, Barbara,
I'll put you on the stack. Who else would like to be on the stack?
Lynn. Pardon? Can I get on the stack?
I didn't hear the name.
Lynn and Barton.
Okay. Barbara, Lynn, and then Barton. Go ahead, Barbara.
Oh, am I next?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'd just like to point out that it's actually not the case that the 9/11 truth movement has, at the beginning, just focused on what proving that the official was false without having to show what they believe happened based upon evidence. That's precisely what the evidence for controlled demolition is. It is the nanothermite evidence, amongst others, for a controlled demolition of the World Trade Center Towers 1, 2, and 7 as what did happen. Therefore, the official story is false. And so right from the beginning, the 9/11 truth movement has gone right for what did happen. I just want to make that clear to everybody.
Well, can I answer that? I'd just like to say that
yeah.
that what she's saying is true, but back to Pablo's what Pablo is doing, he's not trying to do the whole job. It's just a piece of it. It's just part one, and then part two comes. You come in with what you're doing after that.
Right, I'm all in favor of what Pablo is doing. It's just, it can't be what I focus on.
Of course, it's not
okay.
The whole job.
Okay, so Lynn, you were next?
Yes, I think there is quite a lot of value in just saying the greatest common denominator, which is that we disagree with the official story. And if that draws in lots more newbies, then that's a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding all the finer research that exists.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay. And last was Barton. Pablo?
No. You said Barton, right?
Barton. Barton.
Yes. Okay. This is a nice document, and I don't think it's nice to delay its use any more than necessary, and I don't think it has to be absolutely one uniform thing. I mean, anybody in for their local area and what they think the consensus of the people is in their area, whatever, it's I think going to just change this the way they want it anyway, as long as they don't represent it as the only best one. And just, you know, different people will do things which they think are appropriate, and it's actually almost better that way, because if you could get a lot of people wasting a lot of their time trying to hammer out, get one consensus thing, it's still not going to be perfect. Just let different people try it, and some people may say, this one works really, really well. I think it should be an easy way of sharing, maybe. Just mention you've got a new one on the next conference call or wherever. and just go. Just you can start using this tomorrow, no problem. Just do it. And then if you find things that people go, well, what's that? And you change some wording and it works better for you, fine. Maybe it'll be fine for other people too, or maybe in their part of the country it won't be fine. But that's it. Enough. Bye.
Okay, Pablo, you get the last word with us.
I forget who said it, but can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm in under the means, the people means, second line says, it was a U.S. military stand down. Okay, so I think that addresses that the Pentagon was later and that plane or whatever it was that happened there got through the defense because it was a military stand down. That is addressed. And it says, it starts off by saying, outsmarted the world's greatest air defense. So that's exactly to that point. But it's not under the Pentagon, it's under the need. It's a part of the need. That the stand down was part of the need. Overall, I think both things won't take very long to, it was my impression that the person that argued for the amendment, that what they were really talking about was take out the underlines and the black letters, what they're called. But anyway, I don't have a real problem with that. I think it's just a useful tool. I can live without that. But if it stands at the time he's writing, the shit will never get done. Then on the point of, anybody can use their own person. If we start doing that, we'll be right back where we were, because then everybody's going to be using perfect stuff about what did happen. So what we had before in the past was one thing that everybody agreed on. You could explain it any way you want, but at least we're all promoting the same thing. And I think we can agree on what's easier. That's it.
Okay, so...
Spartan, can I get in one more sentence?
One sentence, Spartan. Just one sentence. Go ahead.
One sentence. When you're trying to take a thing like this that you get one or a few of, and you want to make a lot of them, it's better if it's a pointer to a PDF on some local group's website. So if people are taking this and modifying it, they put a little note, this is a version or whatever, by the XYZ group. And if you want the PDF to print nice copies of this, go to this, and you just give them a URL for it. If you can't do it, do. It makes it easier for people to print nice, clean copies, especially when there's a lot of rather small print that is going to be hard to read if it isn't done nicely.
Okay. So what we have is the motion to approve, to endorse this document, we'll call it the Unity Manifesto, with the understanding that it will be addressed for purposes of slight revision by a group of volunteers, which will have to form if the motion passes right here and now, in the very near future, for final presentation. So all in favor of the motion to endorse with that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Well, then the motion passes. So now we are going to need to form this group of volunteers to work with Pablo on final revision. So, who would like to be on that group of volunteers?
P.F. Soto.
P.F. Soto, who else?
Yeah, this is Wayne. I'll join.
Wayne, Susan, are you going to be part of this? Here's your amendment. Susan Turpin. That's just muted.
Sorry, I was having trouble with mute.
Okay. Did you want to be on the group to work with us?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Yes, so did you want to volunteer for the group to work with this revision of the final document?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Please go for it. All right. Anything else? Any other volunteers?
This is Lynn. I mean, barring unforeseen circumstances.
Lynn Bradbury, okay. Okay. Anybody else? Someone wants to go on point. All right. So let's do a timeline here. By when will this revision be completed? any muggles?
This is James, I'll volunteer.
James? Oh, James, okay, we'll put you on the list as well. What would be a decent timeline? Like a week? Do we take a week or enough time to get this done?
Well, I won't be around for the next week, sorry.
Please.
How about by the next meeting?
Okay. Well, I don't know. Does that seem reasonable to you, probably, that we wait till the next meeting with the final draft, or do you want it sooner?
I freaked out if it took more than 2 weeks. Otherwise, it's never going to get done.
Yeah. So, how about 2 weeks? Does that seem like a workable game plan for people?
Yes.
Okay. So, we'll do good. 2 weeks. 2 weeks
and by email, right?
Whoever's please press stars.
Honestly, if you've got noise going on the background, we'll just put star 6 as
somebody's
well.
Washing dishes.
Yeah,
or
dishes.
Stirring drinks.
Yeah, one of this. Okay. So, the four of you, the five of you, let's see, Lynn, Sue, Wayne, P.F. Soto, I'm not sure I have your email address. And James, I have yours. So I have four out of five of your email addresses. I think I have your P.F., but if can you just write me a quick message tonight, and then I'll send everybody's email to everybody, and you guys can proceed from there?
Yes. You're Ken, right?
Yeah, Ken. Ken,
yes.
Request.
Yes, I will send you my email.
So I'll do that within the next 24 hours. I'll get everybody emails to everybody, and you guys can go from there, and within 2 weeks, expect to have it you guys. Okay?
Very good.
All right.
Okay,
so we're good to go, and I think that's all we have time for tonight. We're so far past our deadline. It's unbelievable. So thank you all.
Ken, you got to tell people that we might have a debate and.
Yes, thank you, Barbara. Yeah, we just still do announcements, and that's one of them. Barbara, you want to make the announcement?
No, I haven't heard from Craig about the date.
Craig, is middle of November 16th okay with you?
Left.
He's not.
Craig McKee.
He's not on the call.
Okay.
Well, Craig and I have agreed to the debate in November, and we're deciding between the 9th and the 16th. The 9th is the day after the election, and I'm just concerned that the results might not be in, and we'll all be distracted. I certainly will be.
Did an item drop off our list? Weren't we going to get a lot of details about Christopher Boland's venues being savaged?
Yeah, I think, can we put that on till next month?
We'll have to do that next month.
Yeah, I mean,
we're going to have to postpone these other items until next month. We're so far past time. The only reason we took out Cobbles is because it was already postponed.
I think we're just going to have to let everybody know by email when Craig comes back, whether it's November 9th or the 16th. I hope it's the 16th.
Mark the 16th on your charts and try to reserve the date, and hopefully if Craig agrees, then that will be the date when we'll have the third Pentagon debate, okay?
Thank
you. In the middle of the month, other than a regular teleconference, okay? Any other announcements?
Ken.
Does anybody have any announcements of importance before we sign off?
Yes, Ken, this is Tom. Did we vote to endorse Pablo's manifesto as it is revised in 2 weeks?
We
voted for whatever they come up with.
Yes.
Good. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But heck, I think it's
worth an announcement that the JASTA bill passed today unanimously in the House and the Senate, and it's now the law of the land. It's an amazing.
Okay. Well, I think somebody can't wait to do the business, so if there's no other announcements of importance, I think it's time to call it a night. Thank you all for your patience. There's still a good dozen people on the call, and you're really persevering. God bless you, and have a good rest of the month, and we'll see you the
thank
last.
Thank you very,
thank
very
you
much.
Thank
yeah,
you.
We'll
thank
see
you,
the
everybody.
Thank you. God bless you all.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you all.